Spirit Quest is a journey of awakening through discovery and transformation into self-empowerment. It is our desire to become truthfully informed regarding our personal power and our beloved planet. We are powerful creator beings, in co-creation with each other on a seething cauldron of personal and planetary change. Humanity is waking up. These are our stories. Welcome to Spirit Quest.
Five.
Welcome, creators. Welcome today to Spirit Quest. My special guest today is, again, I have Mark Passio, who has come back, and I am so excited that you've come back today, Mark. It is such a pleasure to have you here again.
Tony, thank you so much for inviting me back onto your show. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I was listening to some previous podcasts that you had on your website, What on Earth is Happening, and you've shifted a little bit on the most recent podcast, and you were talking about some things that you really hadn't talked about in your normal presentations, and I love those presentations because it really digs down into how we have become so disempowered in the imbalance in consciousness, right brain, left brain, and how the domination and control network has very, very intentionally designed this to disempower us. And this kind of goes to what we were talking about just briefly before the show. Many of my listeners know I'm in recovery. I was a hopeless alcoholic who lived on the streets, and I was dying there. And one of the things that was so important for me in my recovery starting almost 19 years ago next month is that I was basically told, Tony, you're stark raving crazy, and it doesn't matter what you think anymore. What really matters now is that you take different action. We don't care if you believe in it, whether you have faith in it or not, but when you take that action, you will get different results, and then when you look back, you will understand why you took the action. And they were brutal. There were many times when I kind of wondered, what the hell have I got myself into? But for me, and this is kind of where I see humanity right now, is that I had painted myself into such a dark corner, is that there was no place else left for me to go. In fact, my recovery group was essentially the last stop on the block. The next stop was a grave. And this is where humanity is at. Many people are very aware that there is something very horrendous coming in the financial system. And I think as well as for the government, this domination and control mechanism of slavery is got to change. And the only way that's going to change is by people taking different action.
That's exactly right. And, you know, what this really comes down to, Tony, is interaction with other human beings. It comes down to communicating a philosophy of freedom to other people, regardless of where you think their mentality or psychology is at, regardless of whether you think that they're open-minded enough to hear it and understand it. You have to start interacting with other people and planting those seeds in their mind in the hopes of them coming to understand it, because as long as the numbers are the way that they are right now, as far as the dynamic of what human beings are willing to believe and what they're willing to act upon, we're not going to make any headway toward building a world of freedom. So until we actually interact with other people and express the philosophy of freedom and the philosophy of natural law and an understanding that what is taking place right now is slavery, is human slavery, don't expect change in the external world to happen. See, it all comes down to the dynamic of that there are requirements for certain conditions to manifest. And if those requirements are not met, the conditions cannot just change automatically as if by some sort of magical means. They have to meet, in order for them to change, they have to meet certain requirements that we need to put into effect in place.
Absolutely. And I don't even know how to frame this question, is that another thing that we kind of touched on right before the show is that there's many people, they keep looking towards our government slavery mechanism to do disclosure. And this gets into the ET abduction phenomena and also free energy. And I've been screaming at people is that until this domination and control mechanism is changed, that will never, ever, ever happen.
I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, just think about it, right? How could disclosure of something that is hidden happen within a system of masters and slaves? How could the freeing of the energy systems of the earth and a leveling of the playing field when it comes to how we produce and distribute energy happen within a system of masters and slaves? If you just think about it logically, those things, openness, transparency, truthfulness, sharing, things, all those dynamics and values don't happen. They're not manifested within a system of slavery where there's masters and slaves present. So it is an impossibility for those conditions to manifest until we get rid of the existing slavery system here on Earth. And this is where people are in cognitive dissonance. They're in a state where they're witnessing what's going on with their own eyes. But in their mind, they've been conditioned from the day that they were born that it's not slavery. They want to keep telling themselves because it's too painful for them to come to an admission within their own mind that what they are in is a state of enslavement, is a state of servitude, is a state of bondage. And until we first admit that to ourselves, that what the condition on earth is bondage, is slavery, is coercion under duress. See, we could talk about the dynamics that prove this, actually, but people have been conditioned into euphemizing these things and into justifying these things. These two dynamics, these psychological dynamics, are what cause cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is the state where someone can hold two completely contradictory notions in their mind simultaneously. So you could say to yourself, 2 + 2 = 4, but 2 + 2 also = 5. Well, those can't be true simultaneously. One or the other is going to be true. If one of them is true, the other one must be false. Okay? But people are believing that they could be true simultaneously. And what they believe is that things like taxation, things like prohibition, things like licensing and permits, okay, things like gun control, things like arbitrary confiscation of wealth, okay, that these things could take place, okay, and we could still consider ourselves free beings. This is called cognitive dissonance. And again, it's made possible by two psychological dynamics that take place within the human mind. And that is euphemization, which is calling something a term in order to make it sound less bad than what it really is, in order to make it sound better or sound more acceptable or appealing. This is using euphemisms, okay? So euphemization in language is the first dynamic, all right? And then justification. Justification is the attempt on the part of someone to create a right or to say that something is a right, that someone has a right to do something that they most certainly do not have a right to do. Okay? That's called justification. So euphemization and justification. Now, if you combine those two psychological dynamics with the indoctrination system of public schooling, of compulsory public schooling for 12 years or 13 years of a person's early life, you have a total mind control system in place that puts someone into a state of permanent cognitive dissonance or near permanent cognitive dissonance. Usually, that cognitive dissonance will remain within the personality of an individual until they suffer enough to come out of it. Usually, suffering is the only way that someone ever comes out of that condition. If we want it to change without enormity of human suffering, okay, so in other words, there is a requirement on the part of people who understand this dynamic. And if we understand this dynamic, so we would ask ourselves, do we want to see it happen in, do we want to see the change that we know is going to be inevitable and must happen because ultimately, the universe is driving this change? I tell people to look at this change like a huge, huge cement wall. Okay. And humanity is like a blob or a ball coming at a little hole in that wall. And the hole is like it's square. Okay. Now we could streamline ourselves to go through this hole in the wall, right? And come out the other side all intact, but we would have to reform or reshape ourselves. And this is an analogy for having to reshape our thinking. Okay. We are being pushed toward going through that wall and going to the other side through that hole. But we're like this amorphous blob that's going to get crushed up against the wall. And in tiny bits, it's going to break up and go through that hole in that wall and come out the other side. Okay. If you could follow this, you know, symbolic analogy. But it's going to be a painful process to do it that way. I call this the way of maximum pain, the way of maximum suffering. This is what humanity seems to be choosing for itself. Now, if we as conscious people who understand that this dynamic is coming, whether we want it to come or not, and we're going through that change, and it's just a matter of how much suffering it's going to take to get to the other side of that barrier, to the other side of that wall, that divide, if you will, okay, then we must understand as conscious people that there is a requirement to streamlining humanity's transformation process and helping them to go through that hole in the wall, if you will, okay, in a way that is less painful or is the minimum amount of pain. And that is the dynamic that you just alluded to at the top of the show. It's taking action, but moreover, that action has to come in the form of interacting with other human beings. You yourself, we have to, as conscious people, start talking to the unconscious. We have to bring this message to them no matter how much they initially reject it. And keep saying it over and over and over and over and over again, relentlessly, with an act of our willpower, so that the seed is planted, even if they don't get it right away, and then you come back and you water it, and then you come back and you give it more water, and then you give it some more light, and then you give it more light, and then you give it more water and more light. Okay? And you keep returning to that process until they finally, something snaps, and then that plant is growing on their own. That seed that you planted is now growing on its own. Okay? Without your immediate assistance. Until we can get the bulk of humanity up to that point, do not expect the dynamic to change. And the people who are all trapped in New Age thought that, oh, it's only a few people have to change and then the whole world's going to change, they're kidding themselves. They're utterly kidding themselves, and they've bought into a New Age deception called that only a very, very, very tiny amount of people are required to change their thinking for the entire dynamic of the world to change. Nothing could be farther from the truth. It is a numbers game. The overall dynamic on Earth is always going to be determined by how many people think the way that they think and are willing to back up that thought by condoning or supporting a certain ideology. And if we don't get people to stop condoning and supporting the slavery ideology, the slavery system on Earth will continue. Until we can get them to think differently and no longer condone and support the slavery ideology, we can never manifest something that is truly different than that. And this is what people don't want to hear, because where it places the responsibility to do the work of creating that change is firmly on the shoulders and in the hands of the people who already understand that the dynamic on Earth is slavery. So see, it's our responsibility to bring this message to other people. They're not just going to magically wake up in a state of hypnotism, brainwashing, and state-sponsored indoctrination. It doesn't have, the mind doesn't just suddenly snap awake on its own. If you think back to your own awakening, it was driven forth by knowledge that other people put out there for you to take into yourself. I know that's how my awakening happened.
It was brutal honesty is what they were doing. They were telling me the truth whether I liked it or not, and they kept repeating the same things over and over again. You know, and I would really like to segue off of something that you you spoke of that just it always brings this thought to mind is that so many people in this nation believe they live in a free nation. And so people understand how that just makes me want to vomit. Here's the deal, folks, is that this nation that is supposedly free has more laws on its books than any other nation on the planet. Another thing that about slavery, look at your wallet. I'm going to take my wallet, open it up. I've got some money in there, which is, as we know, slavery, and it's not even real money. It's backed by nothing. It's a religion. It's only functional because people believe in it. It's backed by absolutely nothing, and in fact, it is a debt note. It's more slavery. And then we have my bank card, more slavery. My driver's license, more slavery. Why do I need to have a license to drive? My insurance card, more slavery. Let's see, what else do we have here? Oh, my Safeway card. Gotta have my Safeway card so I can get the discount at Safeway. More slavery. I think fishing license. More slavery. I gotta pay to go fishing.
Go ahead. Let's talk about some of those dynamics that you just brought up. It's all religion. Everything you talked about there is a religion. It's based on the belief in money and authority. The two great religions of the world. People don't usually think of these things as religions, you know? So if you go back to the root of the word religion, religion means, it comes from the Latin root religare. Religare as a verb in Latin means to tie back or to hold back or to thwart from forward progress. Just think about that for a moment. Why would the word religion be based on a word in Latin that means to stop from making any forward progress? Because that's what religion does. That's what a belief system that doesn't serve where we say we want to go accomplishes. It holds us back. You know, it's a belief system that is holding us back. And the worldwide belief system is in, that is holding humanity back from progress, from evolutionary progress and consciousness, and from going where we say we want to go, which is to freedom and, you know, the furtherance of the evolutionary progress of humanity, is religion in the form of authority and money. These are the two worldwide religions. So if we look at religion in a positive sense, right, in that there is a positive connotation, I want to clarify that. The word religion, religare, in Latin can also mean to reunite with something that has been separated from something, okay? So if we're reuniting two things that have been separated, that could also mean religion, reuniting. And that means tying back together, okay? So in the sense of positive connotation of the word religion, what true religion does, not a false religion, a true religion would reunite us with truth. And in reunification with truth, we would make ourselves free. We would become free because we were unified with truth and with natural law, which I'll get to explaining in a moment what that is. But a false religion does the opposite. It binds us and it holds us back from where we say we want to go. Okay, it ties us back. It's a binding. So authority and money are false religions. They are the worldwide false religions that tie us back from where we say we want to go as a species. And until we stop believing in those religions, there can't be freedom. It's impossible because these things are based on coercion. These things are based in authority is the religion of one person or a group of people claiming that they have the moral right to issue commands to other people who they consider their subjects or their slaves or those who are under their jurisdiction. And that group of people has no right to refuse those commands. They have a moral obligation to obey those commands. That's called slavery if we're being honest with ourselves. Now, you know, not if we're euphemizing things and trying to say that there's something that they're not, but if we're being honest with ourselves, that's called slavery. Okay? Now, money is a more subtle form of slavery because it's debt-based. It's not backed by anything except faith. Faith is the only thing that people really use to back currency. You know, I tell people the only real forms of money, of physical money in the world are food, water, clothing, and shelter. An ability to defend yourself. Anything that you could use to defend yourself and defend your own property. Okay? Those are real money. Everything else is a proxy for the real thing. And people say we use it as an exchange. They say we use it as a store of value, but it's really neither of those things. What it really is resistance to the free flow of energy within any given system. That's what a monetary system is. That's what debt is. It's a resistance to the free flow of energy in any given system. So, therefore, that's why it's put in place, because the controllers want money. They want a control over energy that is normally openly flowing within a system so that they can control the flow and direct it to them. If it's flowing openly in a true gift economy, in a true society that was based in an understanding that we are essentially one, and I'm not talking about communism, I'm talking about real community. In other words, it's a family value way of looking at other people. Instead of looking at everything as separate and divided and me and not me, okay, it's an understanding that as one suffers, all are suffering. So I give people the analogy, if you had a family living in the wilderness with no one else around them, okay, and it was a mother, a father, and a boy and a girl children, okay, would they develop a monetary system among themselves? Would they suddenly institute money? And the father would say, oh, hey, I went out and dug up some of these grubs, the mother said, I went and picked some of these berries and these leaves for a salad. And now we're going to put it all together, and the children are going to have to pay 20 whatever monetary unit they decided on was money to eat this meal. No, of course they wouldn't do that. They would just use the resources at their disposal in the environment and then share them openly based upon what was required for the people living there at any given time, because they would recognize we are all one family. Well, humanity is not at that level of consciousness. I'm not kidding myself into saying that they're at that level of consciousness or believing that. I fully recognize we're not at that level of consciousness. Could I live like that with other people? I am at that level of consciousness. Absolutely, I could live like that with other people. I could get rid of the monetary system immediately right now today because I don't believe in it. Because I recognize that it's not really necessary. That's a religion. That's a belief system. And it's a belief system that holds us back from where we really want to be, which is freedom. And you can't have freedom within a monetary system. It's not possible. The people who think that's possible are believers in a religion. They are religiously diseased and don't think of it that way. They don't believe what I just said there is true. They insist that they're not under a religion or they're not under mind control, because money is the most subtle religion on the earth. And if you think about it, it is 100% the most universally accepted belief system on the entire planet. There is no more universal belief system. There is nowhere you can go in the world where there aren't people who believe in money. Nowhere. There is not any other religion, Islam, Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, that you will find as omnipresent and worldwide as the religion called money. And it is a belief system that is backed by nothing but faith, nothing but people's belief. And if people don't understand it as such, they're under mind control. They are under mind control and cognitive dissonance and don't want to admit that to themselves. These two universal religions, authority and money, until they're gone, until they are wiped off the face of this planet forever, humanity will be a slave species. Get used to it. Enjoy the cage that you're in. Enjoy the pen that you're in. Enjoy your shackles. Enjoy your chains, even though you may not be able to see them. Enjoy your bars. Get you real comfortable in your cage, because you will never, ever, 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 ever be free as long as those religions exist.
You know, you touched on something that I wanted to highlight, and that was Gubernamente. Mind control.
Yes, there it is. You know, the word government, it means mind control. Literally, the actual etymological meaning of the word is to control the mind. And people will vehemently debate this definition. And they could debate it all they want. They could debate it all they want. The way, if you break it down, government comes from the term gouvernare in Latin. Gouvernare, and then the word ment tacked on as a suffix. The suffix ment. That comes from the Latin mens, mentis. Okay, so if we understand the meaning of both of these words, gouvernare in Latin means to control. It was rendered in classical Latin as gubernare with a B. Okay, so gubernare, it's where we get the word gubernatorial when we say the election of a governor of a state, one who governs, one who is the controller of that state. Okay, so gubernare or gouvernare means to control, and then mens mentis means mind in Latin, where we get the English word mental from. Okay, now people will debate the second part of that word because it's where in English meant this as a suffix means the state of or the condition of. Well, anything that results as a condition in the manifested reality had to first exist in mind. This is the principle of mentalism. This means that for, you just think about it just physically for a moment and logically. For a computer to exist, did someone not have to think of the idea of a computing device and then put that into a manifestation in the physical world? Could it just have magically come into manifestation without existing in mind first? No. Could a chair have come into manifestation without it first existing in mind? We would have had to conceive, I want to sit. The idea of sitting down and resting would have had to been in the mind. And then what would have had to been conceived is, a device that provides that function, you know, in the mind would have had to been envisioned. And then the person would have made something akin to a chair, okay? And then all the multifaceted forms of a chair could then come into being by thinking about them and using variations on a theme through visualization. And then you can create those things. But until it's envisioned in the mind, until it's held in the mind, it can never happen in physical reality. Well, this is the same thing. A state of slavery and bondage and control can never truly manifest in a society. That state can never really come in unless we envision it in the mind. Until the control over the mind comes into manifestation and people then support a system of slavery and bondage, can anybody continue to support a system of control, slavery, and bondage? It has to come in the mind first. It has to manifest first in the mind. Then it can manifest in the external conditions. And that's the same for anything. So the suffix ment was actually chosen from the Latin term mens mentis. It literally was taken from mind, the word mind in Latin. That's where that suffix comes from in English. And that was a deliberate thing. That wasn't just something that just magically happened and it was just a coincidence. Okay? When people were forming the English language over time in various locations, all right, taken from Romance and Germanic languages largely, all right, they literally chose, based on the ancient definitions of words, what they were going to make compound words mean based on other words. So in other words, government is literally a compound word. Govern and then ment. It means literally to control the mind, coming from gubernare and mens mentis, mente. Okay? So people don't understand etymologically where words come from. We're saying words, we're speaking words, we're using language, and we don't even understand the meaning, the real original, the origin of the meaning of the word. Forget the colloquial accepted definition of the word as a body of people who are elected representatives. That's the colloquial and a connotative meaning of the word government today. In reality, where that word came from was ancient Latin, and it meant to control thought so that you can direct a society. They recognized that you couldn't direct a society until you controlled other people's thoughts. So where government came from was the idea of steering the mind, steering people's mind to a certain way of thinking. Then you can control them. It literally means mind control. Literally. And people can debate that definition till they're blue in the face, and it's never going to change the truth. It will never change the truth of where that word came from. That is where it came from. That's what it literally and actually means, whether you accept it or believe it or not. And many people will die without accepting that definition of that word. And you know what the answer is to that? They're wrong. They're simply incorrect. They haven't studied it. They don't understand the etymological derivation, and they're incorrect. Period. The end. Okay? So they could debate that forever. Forever. And it will never make it true. Just like you could debate that we're in a system of slavery forever, and it will never make it true. That's the actual point of fact reality, not because I'm saying it or because that's what I think, because that's what is. That's what actually is in actual point of fact reality. And this is part of why people can't arrive at truth, because many people won't accept that there is such a thing as point of fact reality, as objective truth. They believe in the notion that we talked about last time on the show, solipsism, that there's no such thing as objective truth, and that we can never really know what is. We can never really understand the truth about what is or communicate that to other people. And that's utter bull. Okay, that's New Age nonsense that comes from this notion that we don't want to really understand that there's such a thing as truth, because we don't want right and wrong to exist objectively. This is the notion of moral relativism. And moral relativism means you can never come to an understanding of natural law. Okay, moral relativism is the idea that there's no such thing as objective standards of right and wrong behavior, as actual right and actual wrong doing. Okay? And as long as a society believes in moral relativism, believes that there's no such thing as objective right and wrong that can be known, discovered, and then acted upon, we cannot be free. There is a law in nature, that the creator of the universe put into effect in nature. As morality increases, freedom increases. As morality in any given society declines or wanes, so does freedom. I call this the law of freedom, but you could call it whatever you want. Natural law, moral law, God's law. It doesn't make a difference what you really call it. That's just a moniker or a name or a nickname. Okay? This is a law that definitively explains the dynamic of how does freedom or slavery manifest in a society. And how it manifests in a society is whether or not the people of that given society in aggregate, not in as individuals, okay, but as a whole society, taken as a mass, as a whole, in the aggregate, all of them, okay, does the body of people in a given society recognize the objective difference between right and wrong, and then willfully choose right behavior over wrong behavior or not? That is the dynamic that controls whether a society is free or not. Okay? So if the whole society is moral because they objectively understand the definitive difference between right and wrong behavior, and then as a whole, they willfully choose for themselves and also teach to others and support moral action, moral behavior, the society as a whole must be free. They will create a society that is based in human freedom. As a society refuses to understand moral law, objective standards of moral behavior, okay? The objective difference between right and wrong behavior. And they refuse to willfully choose right action over wrong action. The only dynamic that can manifest in that society is slavery. It's not that that's what might happen. It's the only dynamic that is capable of manifesting, that can occur according to law. Not man's law. When I say that, law. I'm not talking about anything that's written down. Moral law is unwritten law. It's not law that man puts into effect or puts into place. Okay? It is the dynamics of creation that the universe has put into effect. You know, people want to think, and many people who say they want freedom insist that the only law that can exist is man's law. But they'll believe in physical laws that govern the natural sciences, you know, the physical world. Newtonian dynamics. Yeah, we can understand those. They exist in nature. And you say, well, we'll put those into effect. Why are there laws that govern the dynamics of motion of physical objects? You know, they'll insist, oh, it's just an inherent part of creation. And I say, yes, absolutely it is. But that doesn't answer my question, what put it into effect? Okay? Because they don't want to admit that there's a creator of the universe or some type of intelligence or force that created the universe. Okay? They want to think that this is all just a magical accident that happened for absolutely no purpose. The universe sprang forward from the distant past for absolutely no reason and no purpose whatsoever. And everything is just a random mechanical interaction of matter, devoid of spirit, devoid of consciousness. Okay? And then you ask them, well, is man bound by laws as all physical objects are bound by laws? Is man's behavior bound by law? Is human behavior bound by law? And they'll say, well, only man's law, only written man's law and what man can do to each other. And you see, it's the belief. This is the belief that atheists have. This is the belief that, you know, very super left-brain people who worship scientism have. And this is a religion. This is a religion. Atheism, scientism is all a religion. It's the same thing. It's just a different form of religion. It's left-brain religion. There is left-brain religion that ties somebody's belief from truth out of the way and holds them back from where they say they want to go, just as there's right-brain religion, the cultural religions, you know, of all the world religions of, you know, Hinduism, Judaism, Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, etc. Cultural religion is what I call that. And then there's New Age religion, which is another form of right-brain religion. So you have your right-brain religions, you have your left-brain religions. And then you have the thing that is the ultimate religion that binds them all together, that they all feed off of to keep themselves going. And that's called the monetary system religion. So, you know, these people who believe that there's no such thing as spirit, no such thing as actual consciousness, and that everything is just a mechanized machine, you know, running on its own like some clockwork mechanism with no purpose. They're in extreme forms of left brain imbalance, and they don't believe that there's anything such as natural law. They don't think that there's anything such as moral law or God's law, okay, that governs the dynamic of whether a society is free or not. You say, does anything in the universe govern human freedom other than human beings, okay? And they'll say no. And while people will say, well, what is governing that dynamic? It is moral law, but it's moral law in conjunction with something else. See, that's the deterministic component to this dynamic. There's two dynamics interoperating with each other. They're always at dynamic play with each other. Okay? It's moral law or natural law, and then that interoperates with human free will. So humanity does have a say in whether they are free or not. It doesn't just, natural law doesn't just affect us without us first making a choice. So while natural law is in place already, whether we're here or not, we get to start the dynamic with natural law. We get to begin that process of the interaction with it through our free will choices. So this is the random component of this system. There's a determined component and there's a random component. The random component is free will. People will say then, well, then humanity doesn't have free will. Absolutely humanity has free will at all times, at all places. There's one thing humanity doesn't have free will regarding. Humanity does not have free will to act without consequence. As soon as you put action into the world, there is an effect. You are sending out a cause. And invariably, whether that action is moral or whether that action is moral, you are going to get an effect that is created based on whether it's moral or whether it's immoral. It is an impossibility to use your free will to conduct an action and then have no consequence as a result of that action, regardless of what that action is. Because that action, by definition, will either be moral or immoral. And if it's moral, you're getting a certain effect. And if it's immoral, you're getting a different effect. Just like putting a piece of code into a computer that will either flip a gate on a processor one way or close it. Okay? And then that bit's going to be on or it's going to be off. It's a zero or it's a one. A one or a zero. And that's it. They're the only two possibilities. I call this is the ultimate dialectic. It's the ultimate choice between two choices, the Hegelian dialectic. You have a choice. You set the choice into motion through your behavior. Do you enact, according to your free will, moral behavior or immoral behavior? and then you get an effect. Invariably, unwaveringly, it always works this way 100% of the time. Now, as individuals choose that behavior, then a whole society starts having a certain built-up dynamic. And in the aggregate, we get a manifestation of either freedom or slavery in the whole society based on what the aggregate proportion of individuals have chosen individually for themselves. As you build up those individuated decisions, those decision-making processes that led to either moral action or immoral action, you then have a society that is either acting morally as a whole, and therefore they're getting freedom, or they're acting immorally as a whole, and then they're getting slavery. So, what determines whether a behavior is moral or immoral? This comes down to the understanding of rights. We have to definitively understand what a right action is and what a wrong action is. And this is the problem. This is the problem, Tony. People don't understand what rights are. They don't definitively understand what right behavior is and what wrong behavior is. And when you tell that to people, they'll say, oh no, I know the difference between right and wrong. And then you'll ask them, is government legitimate? And they'll say, yes, it is. And I'll say, you have no idea the difference between right and wrong, because you just advocated coercion. You just advocated violence. Yes, you just advocated slavery, and of course that's wrong behavior. You'll say, is taxation legitimate? And they'll say, yeah, it's legitimate, it's required, it's needed for some things in society. You just advocated for coercion, violence, theft, and slavery. Okay? So I'll get into this briefly. All rights are actions which do not cause harm to other beings. That's how simple the understanding of a right is. If an action is doing something that you have no right to do involving another being, that's a wrongdoing. That's what a wrong is. There's the difference between right and wrong in as simplistic of a nutshell as it can possibly be explained. I would challenge anybody to explain it simpler than that. A right is an action that does not cause harm to others. A wrongdoing is an action that does cause harm to others. Period. The end. That is as simple as it gets. Now we have to know what are actions that cause harm to others. Because you can't really fully know what a right is unless you know the forms of wrongdoing. Because what you're saying is you're defining a right in the negative sense, or what I call the apophatic. Apophatic terminology or apophysis means defining something in the negative in as simply as it can be explained. You're not trying to describe the characteristics of what it is. You're attempting to describe the characteristics of that which it is not. So you're taking away through a process of elimination, and what remains is what that, the essence of what that thing is. This is called the apophatic inquiry process. I'll spell it. It's A-P-O-P-H-A-T-I-C, apophatic inquiry, or simply apophysis. I'll spell apophysis. Apophysis is A-P-O-P-H-A-S-I-S, apophysis. Look up those two terms, apophatic inquiry method and apophysis, and you'll understand what I mean by this. It's the process of defining something in the negative. It, through negative inquiry, describing the characteristics of what something is most certainly not, to come to a fuller understanding of what it actually is. That's apophysis. So in order to come to a full understanding of what rights are, of what right action is, we have to fully understand what it is not, because as I just gave in the definition, a right is an action which does not cause harm to others. You notice in the definition is the negative, not. A right is an action. Well, what kind of action? It is an action which does not cause harm to other beings. That's what right means. And then by definition, what wrong means is an action that causes harm to others. We are defining that in the affirmative, okay? Not in the negative, in the affirmative. This is what you would call cataphatic inquiry process, or cataphatic inquiry method. That's K-A-T-A-P-H-A-T-I-C, or cataphysis, K-A-T-A-P-H-A-S-I-S. Okay, these are actually Greek. The words come from Greek. Apophysis means to say no in Greek, and cataphysis means to say yes in Greek. Okay, So we're saying what something is or what something is not. Okay. In cataphatic inquiry, we define what it is. In apophatic inquiry, we define what it is not. These are simply methods of description, methods of the discovery of truth by going through a descriptive process of a dynamic or a thing. Okay. So if we look at what harm is, now we're going to cataphatically describe what harmful actions are. We're going to say what they are in the affirmative sense, not in the negative. So what is a harm? What is a wrongdoing? What is a way that you can act that would harm another being, that would do something you did not have the right to do because it caused harm to someone else or another being, another human, another animal? Okay? Well, here's what the wrongdoings are. Okay? The wrongdoings are, one, murder, and two, assault. Okay? So I group these kind of together and call it murder / assault. This is taking of life or attempted taking of life, or at least attempting to harm the physical well-being or health of another individual. That's murder and assault. And again, these are initiated actions. You are starting the taking of that action. That's so important when it comes to the understanding of these wrongdoings. They are wrongdoings because someone willfully chose to initiate them, to start doing them to someone else. Okay? So if you start the action of attempting to kill somebody and then you kill them, you've committed murder. If you start the action of attempting to kill somebody and you stop short of killing them, you've committed assault. Okay? Rape is the third wrongdoing. That means you are taking someone else's free will association to sexually associate with whom they will. Meaning you're coercing them, you're doing harm to them, you're forcing them, you're doing violence unto them through physical force, and you're making them do something that they don't wish to do according to their own free will, namely sexually associate with another being who they say no, they don't want to sexually associate with. That's called rape. Theft. This is the taking of personal property. And yes, there is such a thing. Property does exist in the real world, in nature. Because if I'm using something and I'm in rightful, lawful possession of it, that is my property. I need to be in rightful possession of it, using it, and the third characteristic of property is that I'm responsible for it. So there's a reason this is my computer. There's a reason this is my microphone. There's a reason this is my hard drive. There's a reason this is my lamp. There's a reason this is my desk. There's a reason this is my chair. Okay? They're not somebody else's property. They're my property. I own them. They belong to me rightfully. Why? I came into them via lawful possession. I'm using them. It's not something, I couldn't claim I own all the computers in the world. Because I can't be using all the computers in the world. Just like somebody couldn't claim they own all the oil in the world, or all the water in the world, or all the salt in the world. All natural resources don't belong to individuals, companies, or you know, just groups of men and women. They belong to everybody. They're here for all of us to use as we require them. Okay? So the answer is property exists. I'm not talking about rampantly trying to acquire everything. This is when you say the word property, right-brained individuals immediately think, well, that's pure selfishness and that's claiming something is yours and trying to hold it back from other people. No. There's a reason this computer in particular belongs to me. I use it. One, I acquired it rightfully. I didn't harm anybody to acquire it. Two, I use it. Okay, I am in usage of it. The data on it is mine, and I use it. This data applies to me, and I'm consistently, actively using it. If I left this out on the street corner, and I didn't touch it for weeks, okay, and I would probably actually really say that that's a way conservative estimate, and I would have abandoned it. It would be considered abandonment if I left it out there for even less than that duration of time. Okay? Even if I left it out on the street corner for a week, let's say. If someone else picked that up, they're claiming something rightfully because it's been abandoned. And this is why other people are claiming our rights, because we're not claiming them ourselves. We're not keeping them as our property. We're abandoning them. We're giving them up in so-called returns for protections. property is so important when it comes to the understanding of rights. I can't overstress it enough. Okay? So, theft is the taking of property. Theft is the taking of other people's property. So if somebody came here and they stole my tablet that's sitting here by my side that I use on a daily basis, that would be theft. Why? I lawfully acquired it. I am actively using it, and I'm responsible for it. So if someone else came and just took it while those three things are in place, okay, they would have been committing a wrongdoing called theft. That would be harming me by taking my property. Trespass is another form of natural law transgressions or harmful actions. This is basically taking someone's security within their living space, within their lair. Okay, which you don't have a right to do. You can't just barge into somebody else's home where they live because that's their space. That's their property. They've set aside a certain amount of space for them. They've lawfully acquired it. They've made a claim to it. They're using it. They're in responsibility. They're responsible for it. That means that is their property. You don't just barge into somebody else's home and say, I'm taking over this space or I'm going to be here whether you want me to be here or not. That's called trespass. Someone would have a right to defend their property if that was done. Okay? That's also a natural law wrongdoing, a harmful action. And then finally, coercion. This is threatening somebody and saying, if you don't do what I command you to do, there are going to be harmful repercussions, meaning I'm going to take either property or your well-being. I'm going to hurt you, I'm going to kill you, or I'm going to take something that doesn't belong to me if you refuse to obey my command. That's called coercion. And if we are honest with ourselves, that's what all man's laws are based upon. You ask people, just ask, people can't even look at this from a simple perspective. The super brainwashed can't even see this from such a simple perspective. You ask them, is man's law based in coercion or is it a free will choice? In other words, when politicians are writing down laws, do they say you have a choice whether to obey this law or not? No. They say you must. This is what you must do or must not do. You don't have a choice. Well, any action that somebody else is telling you don't have a choice, that's called coercion. They're saying there will be harmful repercussions if you don't obey. And what that really is, we're even euphemizing it by calling it coercion. That's more than coercion. It's called, ladies and gentlemen, slavery. If we are being honest with ourselves, that is a claim of slavery on another human being. You're claiming, I have the right to tell you what you must or must not do. You must obey. You have no right to refuse. You have no right to challenge me. You must obey. So that's coercion and slavery. It's a claim that you own the actions of another human being. And
And also, if you don't abide by that by force, there will be a penalty.
There it is. So there, again, that's what coercion is. A threat that there will be bodily harm or there will be the removal of property that is rightfully owned by that person. You will either confiscate something from them as penalty for the refusal to obey, or you will actually harm them physically for the refusal to obey. And the third way that the state does it is by physically taking your freedom away by throwing you into a cage or a room or a facility that you may not leave the confines of. It's physically taking someone's freedom of movement. Okay, which is slavery. Okay?
Right.
So murder, assault, rape, theft, trespass, and coercion. Okay? You could tack on one more and call the last one lying. Lying is willfully choosing to withhold or deliberately tell somebody something that is the opposite of the truth. To withhold truth or tell somebody something that you knowingly are aware of is not true. That's called lying. And you're thieving from somebody in that instance the ability to make a good judgment decision based on available information of what is the right thing to do, what is correct, what is the right action, or what is actually true in a certain situation or circumstance, which impairs judgment, okay? That is also what I would consider a natural law wrongdoing. In every one of these instances, Tony, and listeners listening, you cannot find me one of these behaviors that is not a form of theft. All wrongdoing is a form of theft. as I've just described them, nor will anyone be able to bring up another wrongdoing that is not a form of theft. Try to do it. Try to tell me one form of wrongdoing, and I will explain how it is a form of theft. And if we go to the phones later, if we're going to do that, you could even, I challenge all the listeners, try to come up with a form of wrongdoing in a way that you can harm another person that is not a form of theft. You will not be able to do it. It will not be able to actually be done. Okay? Murder, you're taking someone's life. That's not your property to take. That's someone else's life, their possession, their life force. Okay? They're in inhabitation of their body. So you don't have the right to go and harm their physical body and take it and stop them from inhabiting the physical body, their spirit from inhabiting that vehicle for the expression of consciousness called the physical body. Okay? So murder is a form of theft. Assault. Someone's well-being is their own property. I have a right to remain within the state of well-being. Okay? If my arm is not harmed right now, no one has a right to come up and stick a knife in my arm and harm it and cause injury to my arm. Because my arm is my property and the well-being of my arm is also my property. Okay? So the state of good health of a person is not to, is their own and is not to come under attack by someone else through their initiation of force, which is called violence. When you initiate force when you had no right to initiate it, that's called violence. Okay? Different than the defensive use of force. If someone did come up and stick a knife in my arm, I would have the right to defend myself and my arm from somebody doing that behavior by taking defensive, forceful action against them to stop them from conducting that behavior. So, assault is theft. Rape, you're taking someone's free will association. It's a form of coercion, which is a form of theft. You're taking their free will away by forcing yourself on them sexually. That's a form of theft. Theft is self-explanatory. That's taking someone's physical possessions. Trespass, you're taking someone's ability to remain secure within their living space, sleeping space, eating space, you know, their space of personal usage. Okay? Therefore, that's coercion. That's theft. And then, that's trespass. And coercion is taking someone's free will, very simply. It's explaining to someone's it's taking someone's ability to choose for themselves. So you're saying, no, you may not choose for yourself. I'm making that decision for you. You're taking their free will. That's coercion. All wrongdoings are a form of theft. And if we are to understand what our rights are, we have to understand these are what the wrongdoings are. Don't do those things, and you will be acting within your rights.
We just got a really good question in chat that I would like you to answer, and I thank you so much, Trixie. Here's the question. How would Mark handle intellectual property or the like category? Sure. This is an interesting question.
Sure. I don't believe there's any such thing as soon as you make it public. As soon as you make it public, it goes into the public domain, and information is free. That's what I consider the dynamic when it comes to intellectual property. So, see all the stuff on my website? I can't claim that's my intellectual property. Want to know why? I've shared it with other people. Okay? I used to be in a band. When I put my music out, when I gave my music to one other human being, can I claim to them they have no right to do with that what they will? Can I say, as long as you have that CD or that digital music on that, there on that hard drive or iPod or iPad or whatever, okay, I'm going to control what happens to it. Is that legitimate? No, because you're coercing someone else. You're saying, this, I'm taking your free will away to say, oh, well, I have this over here and I could copy it and give it to somebody else. I don't believe that you can do that. I don't accept that that can be done. If you want intellectual property, you keep it to yourself. You don't share it with someone else. Okay? So once something is out there in the public, then you can't claim it as intellectual property. The private thoughts of my own mind are my intellectual property. Someone else can't come in and say, I'm going to force you to tell me what you know. Okay? That's called intellectual property. All right? That would be my rightful property. And if someone coerced me to try to tell me what I know, okay, then that's coercion. Okay? That's them trying to steal something that I have and I hold within myself. But if I put that information out into the world and someone shares it, that's no longer my intellectual property. I can't claim to own it anymore because I've shared it with the world. So it's the same thing when it comes to music or the way of building something or anything like that. If you want to keep it proprietary and never share it, that's one thing. But somebody can't tell me if they put something out into the world, like a book, I can't scan it, put it online. I can't, you know, copy music and put it online. That's, I don't believe intellectual property works by telling people I can't make a copy of something that they've already shared and put out there. That's my take on intellectual property, that there really is no such thing. Intellectual property only exists if the information is completely unshared with anybody else. So once it's shared with somebody else, and they're saying, I don't really agree not to share that out with the world. So, you know, designs on a free energy device. You know, once that's put out into the world, that should be open source and shared. I believe in open source sharing of information. So the information on my website, it doesn't belong to me. Why doesn't it belong to me? I've left it out there for people. I've left it out there for them to take. It would be no different than me taking a physical object and leaving it out on my pavement outside my house for an amount of time. Okay? Once it's out there, it's free for somebody else to take because it's an unclaimed possession. The possession has been abandoned. It's no longer a possession because it's not in my possession anymore. Well, what intellectual property claimants want to claim is something can be not in their possession and still be their property. Well, that doesn't make sense. By definition, property is possession. Literally. You have to be in possession of something for it to be your property. How could you give something or even exchange something to someone else and still claim that's my property? You know, this tablet sitting here on my desk is my property. It's my possession. It's in my possession. If I gave this to somebody else, okay, I can't claim that that's mine. Well, how could I, if somebody had the ability to clone this tablet, okay, not with my information on it that I say is my own personal information, okay, but if they could make a duplicate, like let's say we had a replicator, I can't tell somebody you can't make a copy of that tablet if I put it out to somebody else. If I lent this to somebody and then they made a copy of it, okay, I can't tell them you can't give that copy to somebody else if it's a copy, okay. It's the same thing with intellectual property. When it comes to music, when it comes to written information, things like that, I don't accept that there is such a thing as intellectual property. And it's a question I really haven't been talked about much and haven't been asked much by people, but I give them the same answer, and they think that there's a contradiction there between my understanding of property and intellectual property. There's no contradiction there whatsoever, because when intellectual property is put into the world, it has been shared. That means the other person now has the right to do with it what they will. I can't put out all my podcasts online and say, you can't copy those for people. Okay? I could claim that I have the right to do that, but that's not going to really make it true in reality, in nature. That's a claim by somebody else that they can still control that which they've shared with the world. You have no right to control that which you have already shared. Either control it or share it. You can't do the two things simultaneously. That's where the opposition comes in. That's where the contradiction comes in. You see, these people want to have it both ways. They want to put it out there for consumption multiple times. See? Because they want, and I have no problem with people putting something out there and saying, whoever wants to contribute for my effort to put this out there can buy it from me. Okay? So I make DVDs, right? Physical objects that take, you know, effort and work to build, to make, to create. I have to sit here and burn them on a duplicator. I have to then make the covers. I have to buy the jewel cases and put the covers inside the jewel cases. Okay? That's work. If I say I want to be compensated for that physical object, nobody can just steal that physical object from me. Because it took work to create that, and if I want a certain amount of compensation for both the materials and the work, I can say, well, I'm going to charge $10 a DVD or $15 a DVD or whatever, okay? That's legitimate, okay? But then once I sold that DVD, could I go and say to somebody, you can never copy this for your friend? I'm going to control what you do with your property. You bought this from me. It's your property. And I'm going to say, you may not make a copy of this? It's nonsense. If I sell a DVD to somebody, they can copy it for whoever they want. Okay? Or they can tell somebody else, hey, you want an original? Mark makes these. Go ask Mark if you want, if he can make you a DVD and buy it from him. If you want to contribute some money to his cause, then that person is free to interact with me to purchase that. Okay? I have no problem with that. That's an exchange. Okay? Based on labor. All right? And what I would say is, if the monetary system wasn't in place and we were just sharing the resources that are available to us, I'd give away DVDs. Okay? That's why I also make my information free. Nothing that I sell at DVDs, at lectures that I set up a table usually at lectures that I give live. I sell DVDs there. Okay? But I get all the DVDs I sell, they're available online. It's all freely shared information. I wouldn't make a DVD that was unshared. I would share it online first. I make DVDs for people who want to play them in a DVD player. That's why I make them. Okay? So I still share that information. It's still available for free. And then there's a paid form, a physical form that you could buy for people that might not be savvy with computers, or, you know, you just want to play it on a television, you know, seated in your living room. A lot of people still have DVD players for that. That's why I make those available. But, you know, this is the equivalent to, again, I used to be in a band. I would put our music freely available online for people who wanted to download it. We still had CDs at our show. If you wanted to buy them from us, you were free to do that. You know? So this concept of wanting to have it both ways is what I don't accept. Either the information is out there, in which case you can't control what other people do with it, or the information's not out there. That's called private property. Okay? The information I've put on my website is no longer my private property. You want to know why? Because it's on my website. It's not my private property anymore. I've made it public for other people's public consumption. Once they take it in, they can do what they want with it. Once they have it in their possession, meaning that it's online, you could download anything that's on my website. If it's online, you could download it. Okay? So it's out there online. It's downloadable. Okay? You could do what you want with it from that. Once you've done that, you've made a copy. You didn't destroy the original. You've made a copy of it. You download it, you made a copy. That's what I want people to do. As a matter of fact, it's the opposite way. I want people to copy it and share it as widely and freely as possible. Please don't look at any of this as my intellectual property. It's not. It's something I've shared with the world, meaning it's now public domain. Therefore, please make as many copies as possible. Please share it as widely and as freely as possible. That's the only way this information's going to propagate and get out there to the masses. Okay, don't write to me for permission to share anything on my website. I would ask politely, please don't take it out of context. Keep it in context. That's how it's intended to be taken in. You know, so don't quote me out of context and say I'm saying something that I'm not saying. That's I think, wrong. That's lying, technically. You know, really, if we want to, you know, be honest about what that is. So keep it in context, but share it as widely and as freely as possible. You don't even need to ask for permission. I put up on my site, don't even bother writing to me for permission to share this information. This information is here to be shared. You don't require my permission because it's not my property. Intellectual property is private. You know what my intellectual property is? I don't want to share data that's on my computer that pertains to me and my life. So my intellectual property is, hey, my contacts list, my personal email, personal thank you letters that might come in. Unless I choose to share them, they're my personal property. If I choose to share part of that, then it's out there in the public domain. But, you know, someone wouldn't have a right to break into my computer and steal all my contact data. That's my private property. It's not publicly available data or information that I have shared. Okay? If I post all that online, okay, somebody else gave that to me. They gave me that information. I might be sort of betraying their trust by saying, they may have implied, if I give this to you, I don't want this number spread everywhere. I might have given my Skype contact or my personal cell phone number to others and say, could you please not share this? And they say, yeah, I won't share it. Well, could I take physical repercussive action against them if they posted my phone number online or posted an email address I didn't want them to post online? No. I shared it with them and I asked them to agree not to share it, but they don't have to agree to that. Once I share something with somebody and give it to them, you know, that's theirs to do what they want with as far as I'm concerned. If you want something to be private, keep it private. So in other words, I'm a gun owner. My guns aren't shared with other people. They belong to me and me exclusively. Okay? I don't hand them to other people and say, hey, take this for as long as you want to hold on to it for. No, it's a private possession. I own it. I keep it. I keep it private. Okay? If you don't want to share something with somebody else, keep it private. Then it's your rightful private possession. Okay? If you put it out there for other people, then it's a shared possession. Okay? So, again, if I took a knife out of my kitchen drawer and left it on the pavement outside, I can't claim that that's my private property anymore. I've put it out there for somebody else to take. The same thing with information. If you put it out there for somebody else to take, it's no longer your private intellectual property anymore. It's something that you have shared with others, and it's in the public domain. That's my take on intellectual property rights.
Okay, thank you so much for that. We need to take a station break, and sure. I'll remind our listeners that we are listener-supported, so please donate to Wolf Spirit Radio. The donation button is on the homepage, and your donation is a poke in the eye of the corporate pyramid, the domination and control mechanism. Dave Corso has given us a wonderful platform to share this information so we can free humanity. So please donate. Please help support the station. And Dale is my manager and producer today. Dale, you can take it away. And I think he's got queued up one of my favorite songs, Things I Never Needed by Grace Potter. Kind of goes to the whole thing here, bleeding for things we never needed. Thank you, Dale.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit with Dave Corso.
Take my heart, go on, take it away. I've got nothing to say. Take away this sense of regret. Take the things I need to forget. Take the mistakes I haven't made yet. All I have left. I don't wanna be the one who lets you down. All I did was run myself around.
Welcome back, creators. Welcome back to Spirit Quest with my special guest today, Mark Passio. And we're basically going through this domination and control mechanism. And what we're going to continue with is this entire idea of statism and licensing and how that is yet more functions of this slavery mechanism. Go ahead, Mark.
Sure. You know, for people who still don't really grasp that all forms of government are slavery, okay, and until people abolish the very idea that government must be in place in order to prevent chaos from happening, there will be chaos. See, government isn't the thing that prevents chaos. Government is chaos. It is chaos because it's slavery. Would anybody not say that a state of slavery is a chaotic condition, is a state of chaos? Of course it's chaos. That's not order. That's not the order that we want to see. It's the exact opposite of it. And yet people insist that the opposite of that order is order. They think chaos is order and order is chaos. You know, they'll say, this system of slavery, that's order. No, it isn't. That's chaos. The absence of a system of slavery is order. Okay? That's freedom is order. Slavery is chaos. I don't see how it could be possibly any simpler, yet people have those things reversed. They think slavery is order and freedom is chaos. You know, when they hear the word anarchy, this is a perfect example. They've convinced people that the word anarchy means chaos, when in fact, in its Greek roots, all it means is the absence of rulers. No archons. Anarchon is where the Greek word for anarchy came from. The Greek roots of the word anarchy came from the prefix a or an, which means not or not present or absent, and then archon, which means ruler or master, as in the ruler or master over slaves. It doesn't mean no rules. There's always going to be rules in effect, natural law, the rules of morality, the laws of morality that the creator of the universe put into effect will always be in place. That can never not be in place. So it doesn't mean no rules. There will always be rules in effect. But it means nobody is the ruler. Nobody is the master. Nobody is ruling over somebody else as if they are their slaves. This other group of people are their slaves. So it's the absence of a master-slave relationship. So if you ask people, what does it mean that there are no masters and no slaves? Well, they would say a state of freedom. Freedom exists then if there's no masters and no slaves. Well, you just talked about the word anarchy. You've just defined the word anarchy. The state of there not being any masters and slaves is called anarchy. And they've convinced people that's chaos. So they've convinced people through word magic, through the obfuscation of the real meaning of words, that freedom is slavery. That freedom is chaos, I should say. Okay? They've convinced people that anarchy is chaos. Anarchy is actually freedom. Anarchy is order and freedom, and they've convinced people that it's chaos and, you know, some form of lawlessness that equates to humanity being enslaved. When in fact, it's the exact opposite. The non-presence of anarchy, meaning there is a control system by man in place, that and he is claiming to be master over others, which is what government is. That's chaos. That's slavery. See, there used to be this thing called the Old World Order, and it was the notion that a king or a priest of some kind, or some kind of a fusion or blending between those two so-called rulers,
authority.
Was the unquestioned authority, the authority figure. And there was just one of them. And only one could rule, only one could sit on the throne, and all the authority was vested in that one being. And this came from our origins as a species, which we're going to talk a little bit more about in a little while, okay? This notion came from how we came to be as a species, that there was authority vested in one being, and that being ruled over everybody else. Now, you could call that kingship, but that's a euphemization. You could call that rulership. It's a euphemization, you know? You could call that his reign, and that's also a euphemization. What it really is slavery. It's the authority of one being over all other beings, which, again, you could euphemize it and call it authority or kingship, but if we're being honest with ourselves, that's the state of slavery. That being is the master, and all of the other beings are his subjects or slaves. If we're being honest, not if we're euphemizing things. See, there's no such thing as a king and his subjects. There's a master and his slaves. That's what a king is. That's what a king was and is. If somebody's claiming to be king, they're claiming to be the authority over other people and have the divine right to tell them what they may or may not do. If we're being honest. Again, most people will lie to themselves from the moment they wake up till the moment they go to sleep and then wash, rinse, and repeat the process on a daily basis. They will never be honest with themselves. They won't be honest with themselves because they hate themselves. They love their chains. They don't want to have personal responsibility to choose right action over wrong action for themselves. And they're in such a state of self-loathing that they want to be ruled. And,
you have a very good point here about this is the thing that I find fascinating about the consciousness of humanity, and that for whatever reason, and I would differ a little bit. I'm not sure that it's because we hate ourselves, but we're so used to this mechanism and not questioning it.
Right.
And it is bizarre when you step back and you look at the big picture and how obvious some of this stuff becomes. And I would really like you to address something that I've seen come up in chat between people that are chatting with each other. And I find it fascinating that so many people automatically go to this position when talking about this, the possibility of a society actually being truly, truly free and exchanging energy.
Sure.
Everybody goes, not everybody, most people go to, well, then there's gonna be the lazy ones that aren't gonna do anything.
Right.
And half the people will be doing all the work. And I don't know about anybody else, but my sense, my spiritual awareness tells me is that if we eliminated the debt, slavery, money, religion, it would be unbelievable the amount of creation and resources, because we're freed from the shackles that keep limiting us. And everybody, and this gets into this whole programming and hypnosis we've all been subjected to from the day we were born, that this is the way everything works.
Right.
And stand in line, you know, be one of the sheeple, just follow the directions and don't ask questions. But if we had a different type of consciousness that says, you know what, you're a unique being, you're made by this creator, you have a gift to bring humanity, from the day you're born, pursue that. And everybody would have such a different consciousness that everything is free and you're to pursue this gift because that is the thing you have to bring to humanity.
That's right. And that addresses that notion that people immediately go to when you say things can be truly free. They say, well, there'll be these lazy people who won't want to work. Well, what makes you think that there would be if we educated people properly? See, the uneducated people might do that when you started that process. But if you put into effect a system of true education, not indoctrination, true spiritual education from the moment somebody was born, what makes you think they're going to grow up to be like that? People grow up to be like that because of what they've taught and the conditions that they've grown up in. That's what is largely determining people's behavior. The information that they've taken in on a daily basis since the moment that they were born and the influences that they were around. Okay? I have a strong work ethic, but I don't have a strong work ethic for accumulating worthless pieces of paper at the expense of my soul. Okay? What I do on a daily basis is hard work that requires continual effort, because it is working with the hardest thing that there is to work with, and that is the human mind. And believe me, it is a million times harder than diamond. Okay? As calcified as the human psyche is, there is no substance on earth that is harder to work with. Working with cutting diamonds would be infinitely easier than working with how to cut through the mind control of the human mind. Okay? So I not only have a good work ethic, I've chosen to do the hardest work there is to do, because it's the only real work there is to do. To change the human condition. To change the human mindset. Because that's the only thing that can ever change the human condition. You're never going to change the condition unless you change the mindset. The condition follows the mindset. So, why would the mindset exist? Why would the condition of people being lazy exist if the mindset of people being lazy weren't programmed into them? Of course, that would have to be programmed into them first. And if we don't program that mindset into people through proper education of what's really going on in the world, you won't have that condition manifest. See, what never enters into the mind of people who think this, Tony, is it's my responsibility to teach other people the right way of being in the world. They don't want that work. In other words, they don't want to do what we're doing. See, that's what it really all comes down to. They don't want to do the great work. They don't want to do the work of properly educating their fellow human being, because in many cases, they're not fully properly educated yet. They haven't gone all the way to the truth and understanding of what's going on and what is, and of a higher level of consciousness. So then, of course, they'll say, other people's education isn't my responsibility. Well, yes, it is. It absolutely is, and it always is. It's all of our collective responsibility to speak the truth to others. And that's the problem. That's what's gone wrong with this world. The people who didn't know the truth at one point said, screw it. I don't want to tell these dumb people what's really going on. They'll hate me for it. They'll call me names. They'll segregate me from society. And, I'll be ostracized. And they didn't want to take the sacrifice unto themselves that doing the true great work is, because they were becoming lazy. And this is the dynamic with people who want it to be a free society, but don't have the willpower to make it become one by an act of will through getting into the mind of other people and making their minds change through influencing it by your words on a continual, constant basis of never-endingly putting the truth out there before their consideration in as widely and as freely a way as possible. I guarantee you, Tony, I 100% guarantee you this. You will ask those people, what's your information? Where's your website? Where's your radio show? Okay? Where's the CDs that you put all this information on? How about the hard drives that you share with other people? Where, with all information on it about what's going on in the world? Where is it? What do you do? If I Google your name, what will I find? How many results will I get back? If I Google your name, will I get Facebook and Twitter, and LinkedIn? Or will I get multiple websites sharing your wisdom from all over the world? Google my name, ladies and gentlemen. Put my name in double quotes into a search engine, any search engine. Okay? And I can honestly tell you, do that, because I know what you'll find. Okay? You'll find tons of shared knowledge. Google your name. Search engine your name in double quotes. What will I find? That's all I have to say about that dynamic. If you're not teaching others, you're part of the problem. You're part of the problem. And to just basically address the dynamic of unworthiness. See, people don't want to be free, and I agree with you. They've been conditioned, and it's hammered into them that there has to be rulers. You can't be truly free. Humanity can't. Oh, we're too bad. See, this notion of human nature as inherently flawed or bad. okay? And I'm not telling you our condition isn't inherently bad, because it is. It's very bad. It's evil. The human condition right now, I wouldn't even just call bad. I'd call it evil. We exist in an evil condition right now. Is that human nature? No, it is not. The nature of the human being is that it is programmable. It can be programmed and influenced to take on different behaviors if it is educated properly. That's what programming is, to lead someone out of darkness. Right programming leads someone out of darkness through education. Wrong programming leads someone into darkness through indoctrination. Right programming is true education. Wrong programming is indoctrination. And either you're part of one of those processes or the other. Either you're continuing to educate people and help raise consciousness, or you're continuing to indoctrinate people with these false notions of human nature and these false notions of why we can't be free. Okay? You're part of one of those dynamics or the other. I know which dynamic I'm a part of. What dynamic are you a part of? Okay? If I Google somebody's name, that's all I need to know. That's all, that tells me everything about what they're doing. And guess what? I don't care how much they claim to be doing in their personal life, in direct physical personal interaction with other people. Because if you're not sharing it as in the widest and open, most open format that you can, which is on the internet, you're not doing what you can be doing. You're not doing as much as you can be doing. Every single human being that I come into physical interaction with in person, in the flesh, I do the same thing with. I talk about these topics with them all the time, every day, all the time. No matter who I'm interacting with, this is what I'm talking about. And I don't waste my time talking about trivial stuff. I do have hobbies. I do have personal interaction and fun with other people, okay? And I do take time for that. But in general, when I'm interacting with people, I am bringing up these topics to find out what do they know, what can I explain to them about it, what resources can I put them onto so that they wake up. The only thing I'm concerned about when I meet a new person or interact with another human being is how awake are they and how can I help them to become more awake. That's what the great work is, and that's what these people who are saying human beings can't be free and they're just the way that they are and it has to be like this, or that they'll just be lazy and they can't understand, etc. and so forth, they don't want to do that work. You know why? They know subconsciously, even if they don't recognize it at a conscious level, that that great work is the hardest work there is to do in the universe, in the whole universe. To change thought is the hardest thing there is to do in the universe, and they don't want to be part of that work.
Absolutely. And Mark, this is something that really made me see your light. And I started realizing this probably after listening to your second podcast, or actually it was a YouTube video, and your presentations on YouTube are absolutely fantastic. But one of the qualities I see in you, and I started to recognize it in myself, and along with some of the other radio show hosts, is that we're not seeking acceptance outside of ourselves. We have come into a place of truth to where it becomes so powerful that we can become passionate about this and not care what other people think and what right. other people say. And I'll tell the listeners, the most difficult place I have in my existence right now is within my own blood family. They just don't want to look at or accept these things that I have studied, that I've researched, and I just posit the seeds every once in a while. I don't even plant them. I just bring it up every once in a while, and I think I shared a couple of shows ago on how I was absolutely flabbergasted when my mom asked me how I did my research. And I went back, and I never questioned why she asked that question, but it was kind of startling because I've been dropping these little seeds here and there over the last 5 years. And what she wanted to know about was fluoride. And I have been talking about the dangers and the problems and the poisoning that fluoride does to the human body, and she just didn't want to hear it.
Yep. because she doesn't want to believe that there are people who are so evil in this world that they would put rat poison in your drinking water. And that's all it really comes down to. The person doesn't want to acknowledge where we're at as a species. They don't want to admit to themselves the world is that evil. And let's just call it what it is. It's not misguided. Doesn't know. People know what fluoride is. They're still putting it in the water because they want people sick, stupid, and dying. That's what they want. They're trying to cull the population. They're trying to make the population, deliberately trying to make the population dumber. Okay? They want people in that state of docility. They want people in the state of stupidity. They want people in the state of not caring. Fluoride put into the brain makes you those ways. It makes you stupid. It makes you not care, not want to resist. Okay? So that's one of the first things I tell people. That people say, what action can I take? What can I do? Even if I don't know what's really going on yet. What can I do? The first thing you can do is clean up your diet. The end. And there, right there, a wall goes up. And they'll say, oh, you're telling me to eat differently. Yes. Because what is your brain made of? Your brain is made of what you eat and drink. The end. That's what your brain is made of. It's an inescapable conclusion. The quality of your brain, which controls your thought processes and your ability to break down information and come to an understanding of it, is going to be inevitably determined by the health of the human brain. Therefore, if you want the human brain in a healthier condition and in a less toxic condition, you have to clean up your diet and you have to take in more nutrient-dense foods that are less toxic. And that means you have to clean up what you drink, which means not taking in toxins through your drinking water. And when you tell that to people, they'll insist that you haven't given me a solution. I've given you, by just telling you that little bit of information about food and water, probably the biggest solution that you will ever hear from another living soul. Because that's what your brain is made of. What you put into your body. And you know who's in control of that? You are.
Yeah, this is the garbage in, garbage out synopsis.
That's it.
One of the things, and this is another radio show host, Dr. Will Spencer, has done so much good work with me in helping me clean up my diet. I've gone to a paleo diet. I do not go to the center aisles of the grocery store. I go to the vegetables and I go to the meat. That's all I get these days. And I'll tell you this, listeners, it was extremely difficult to make that transition. But I have eliminated wheat and the other grains from my diet, and it has made a remarkable difference in not just my mental capacity and my brain functioning better, but what I found even more remarkable is that when I was with my folks over Christmas vacation, my mom almost dropped a pie when I walked into the kitchen when I got there, because she was so surprised at the difference in the way that I looked. And she exclaimed out loud, "Tony, you look at least 5 to 8 years." I don't know why she said 8 years, but 5 to 8 years younger than I've ever seen you. What are you doing? It was that noticeable.
There's so many processed foods in the human diet, and all they're doing is basically gumming up the human body, gumming up the system. We're not able to eliminate a lot of these toxins. They stay in our system. They build up, and ultimately they affect thinking. They affect energy. See, these are blocks to energy. Really, everything we're talking about here comes down to energy and whether it flows or whether it's blocked. This is a theme we want to keep coming back to.
Right. Okay. Mark, I really want to get this in right here because you're talking about the energy, and Sam Squatch in chat made this comment, and I think this is very important in what we're trying to put forth here, is that you can try and force your views on another person and you'll quickly find out the harder that you push, the more people resist. Yes. but that's why we're talking about just planting the seed. Keep bringing the same thing up over and over again. You're not forcing your view on anybody, but what right. you're doing is you're putting the truth out in the open. And as with my mother, it took her 5 years.
Right. You don't have to get somebody to accept everything immediately.
No.
And it's not just about making them accept what you already understand. It's about constantly influencing them to go into the process of learning for themselves, which they have not taken onto themselves. See, the problem is that humanity is not a group of autodidactic people, meaning self-teachers. You have to teach yourself. Somebody else can influence you to start wanting to learn, but then you have to want to learn. Most of humanity is in the place where they don't want to learn. And what we have to try to influence them to do is to become autodidacts or self-teachers, self-learners, okay, who don't need to be guided by the hand. Nobody needs to guide me by the hand on what to learn. People can put certain information out there, and if it's something that I know that it can contribute to the dynamic of freedom and, less slavery here on earth, I'm going to take the ball and run with it and do that research for myself, because I want that dynamic of more freedom and less slavery to come into manifestation. So I'm going to teach myself. I'm going to go and learn about it myself. I'm going to seek it out. The problem is most people don't seek out truth. They're content with what somebody else tells them. Okay? So the quality of the human brain, through the quality of what foods we're putting into our body, has everything to do with this dynamic of keeping people docile, lazy, and willing, and not caring, and just willing to say, oh, I don't care what the truth is, or I don't have the time to do that, or I don't have the willpower to do that. And this is also affecting the people who are thinking like the person you're talking about here, Tony, who say, I can't do that because other people are too hard-headed and thick. Well, you know what the problem is? They're not doing it enough. They're doing it a little, then they're letting off, and they're saying, I'm done, and I'm not going to continue to do it. The great work is going to require constant effort. It means you're going to have to give up other things you want to do in life. Sacrifice is required. Do you know how many other things I could do with my time than this? Okay, I could be going out doing things that I want to do right now, and I'm not doing those things. I have said I'm going to make time to do interviews. I'm going to make time to have a radio show. I'm going to make time to research. I'm going to make time to make slides. I'm going to make time to do live presentations. I'm going to make time to talk to people who I think are thick-headed, retarded people, meaning that they are so slow in the head that they have been retarded or slowed down. Their thought processes are so slowed down. I'm not talking about some sort of genetic condition of retardation. I mean literally that these people are slowed. That's what the word to retard something means, to slow it down from making forward progress. And that's what to have been retarded means, to have been slowed down. And what sometimes we are talking to is people who have been retarded. They have been made into someone who is retarded. And I'm not talking about that from a medical condition. I'm talking about that from a purely psychological, mental and spiritual condition of slowing down, of retarding the transformation process. So do you think I want to talk to people like that? Do you think that's something I want to do? That I say, hey, Mark, what do you want to do during the course of a day? Oh, let me think. I want to go and talk to the most thick-headed people to try to get them to reverse their way of thinking. That sounds like fun. That sounds like how I would really want to spend every day of my life. I don't choose actively. I do choose actively and willfully to do that, but it's not because that's what I desire to do. I wish this wasn't necessary to do. I choose it willfully because I, in my level of knowledge of what's really going on here and how to solve the dynamic that's going on, have a moral obligation to convey this information to other people who don't know it yet. And I'm going to continue to do that constantly and in as unapologetic and freely available a way as possible. And again, that's the great work. If you want to know what the great work of human transformation is, that's it. That is what it is. It's to give up what you want to be doing with your own life and say, I'm going to teach the truth about what's taking place on this planet to other people with my time. That is the great work. And the reason we're still enslaved is because not enough people are doing it. The reason we are enslaved is because, one, there's a huge body of people who are still supporting and condoning the slavery system in their ignorance. And two, the people who are partially awake haven't converted themselves to fully awake by taking the action of doing the great work, as I've just described it. And until enough people do the great work, the big bulk mass of ignorant hordes of retarded people who support everybody's slavery, including their own, and the people who should be teaching them, all are going to be enslaved. You're never going to change that dynamic because they're the people who are holding it in place. The dynamic is being held in place by the ignorance of the hordes of humanity who support and condone the slavery system in their ignorance. Until the smaller group of humanity that does understand the illegitimacy of slavery starts to do the great work by working on that mass, that horde of people, do not expect the dynamic to change. That is what the great work is. That is what it will require to get it done. Until you develop that willpower and you develop that self-discipline and you develop the sacrifice, you admit that this is going to take your own sacrifice of a few things, your time, your attention, and you are going to have to sacrifice what you want to be doing for yourself. What you want to be doing with your time for yourself to work on other people. That's what's going to be required.
You know, this really gets into this energy dynamic also of service to self and service to others. And right. So the listeners and the people in chat understand is that I would really like people to understand that what this is compassion. And one of the things that, even though having the difficulty with my friends and other people around me, is that I have extreme compassion for them because I do understand, like me, they have been poisoned from every possible avenue possible and programmed. And what is so fascinating about this is that when we really start examining our belief systems, most of them are not personally ours. They were either given to us or forced on us. And what is fascinating about how this matrix of control and domination through belief systems is that all of us, and especially those who are participating in chat, we came here for a reason. Somehow, some way, we woke up, at least partially. And what happened through that awakening is that we had to shift some belief systems and some things we just let go of instantly. And that is what is so fascinating about this mental prison that we're in, is we can change our belief systems instantly when we get a hold of the truth. It's just that fear of letting go of something that we thought was working. All of a sudden we're challenged that this isn't working anymore. Here's some new information. This seems to be the more truthful than what I was holding on to. And it instantly becomes so easy to let go of that old belief system. That's and right. This is what was so challenging for me personally, is that as I was doing my research, there were things that were coming up that I just simply could not accept. But as I did more research, as I know many of the listeners have, is that there were certain things that I just couldn't accept. One of them was chemtrails, and yet I was seeing it every single day. And where my belief system got so challenged is that I could not understand, let alone even comprehend, that there would be psychopaths actually doing this to most of humanity.
Yep.
That was hugely challenging. Hugely challenging.
Tony, what you just described, in the sense of compassion, bringing the truth to other people, you're seeing that they're still suffering due to their ignorance.
Exactly.
That's what starts you wanting to communicate the truth. At some point, you can even go past the dynamic of having an inward desire to alleviate the suffering of other human beings. And you go up to a higher level of why you're going to do the great work. And that is not just so you have this dynamic that's operating service to self, right?
Yeah.
Because I understand other people's ignorance is going to be connected to my own comfort, my own freedom. I want to do it because of that. So I want to educate other people about freedom because I want to be free. That's the first level. You go up to the second level where you see because they're not free, they're suffering themselves. And I have compassion for their suffering, so I want to show them how not to suffer by what they're holding on to, the religious beliefs that they're holding on to. By abandoning them and then doing what's true, following the truth, they're not going to suffer as much anymore. They're going to be moving toward truth and they're not going to suffer, and therefore their suffering is going to be alleviated. So that's compassion for others dynamic, which is a higher dynamic than just service to self. That's service to others. But there's one more level on top of that where you say, even though I'm doing this not only in service to self because I want to be free and service to others because I don't want to see other people suffer because I have compassion for their own suffering and their own self-inflicted suffering through their ignorance, and that's why I want to educate them. The final dynamic that you get to is, I am in service to truth itself. Service to truth is where a teacher of the great work, a doer of the great work needs to get to. Where it's not even because you want to help humanity. That comes as an ancillary or secondary repercussion, a product of doing the great work. But it comes from stepping into the dynamic of being a servant of truth. That's the highest level that you can come at the great work from, is understanding that what you are doing is you are simply being a servant of truth. And what I mean by that is you're not a slave to truth. What you're doing is you're serving it to other people. When I say servant, servant, one who serves. One who takes something and gives it to someone else, like a waiter in a restaurant. Your waiter in a restaurant is your servant for the time that you are there. Okay? He is taking the food from where it is created or prepared, and he is bringing it to you, prepared, in an arrangement. That is what someone who teaches the truth or does the great work is doing. He's aggregating this information. He's putting it into a package like a waiter would aggregate food. The chef would aggregate the food, put it on the plate. The waiter is going to take the plate already aggregated to the person at the table and serve it to them. A servant of truth does the same thing. They aggregate the information. They put it into as nice and attractive of a package so that it can readily be eaten or taken in or consumed, and they're giving that information to other people. That's how I consider myself, a waiter, a servant of the truth. And it also means we're waiting for them to take it in. It's you think of the words we use. A servant in a restaurant is called a waiter. We are waiting. We are not just serving the people the truth, we're waiting for them to catch up to us. It's waiting on them in time. You know, which requires patience. Patience and constant effort. Patience and constant effort. Patience is one I have to work on with myself. I want things to change overnight. Most people do who understand what's going on. But it didn't get like this overnight. It's not going to change overnight. We have to use constant willpower and build the numbers of people who are bringing this message to other people. There is not enough people doing the great work. That's the problem. There's too many people who are still ignorant, and there's not enough people educating them. That's the bottom line, baseline dynamic of the problem. Until people understand the real causal factors of what's going on regarding natural law and free will and our choice of either living in harmony with natural law and gaining freedom, or disobeying natural law and living in opposition to it and being enslaved. Until the people who do understand that make a conscious free will decision to say, I'm going to spend as much time as I possibly can teaching that dynamic to others and doing it in as free and open a way as possible, which means you have, even if you don't have the skills, some people will say, Mark, I don't have the skills to build a website. Well, pay someone who does. Pay someone to be your webmaster and build you that site with your ideas on it. That's what it's going to take. Save the money. Spend the money. Instead of spending the money on junk you don't need, get a website built with your knowledge, with your ideas. If you know the dynamic, put up a site. Lobby to a radio station that will put you on air for free as long as you have a computer connection. You can get on radio stations if you're knowledgeable. Okay? Start that. Do something, some way of communicating freely to other people is as open and free a way as possible. Okay? And the gauge you should be determining as to how effectively and how much you're doing the great work is plug your name into a search engine in double quotes, meaning as a whole phrase, first and last name. Wrap it in double quotes. So if you type in double quotes, Mark, space, Passio, end double quotes, and hit return in a search engine, you will find how many websites, web pages, my name is put on, is there appearing in the page somewhere, okay? And if you do that, you can then click in and see, what am I talking about? What work am I putting out there? If you do that with your own name, compare it to people who are doing the real great work. Now, of course, you could do that with people who are talking about trivial nonsense or celebrities, okay, and you're going to get a lot of pages, political figures. I'm talking about if you say, I'm doing the work of helping to change the dynamic for the positive, okay, the gauge by which you are actually doing that is how many web pages is your name appearing on. That's going to be the gauge, okay? And people don't want to hear that. They'll say, oh, that's not telling anybody anything. Yes, it is. That's telling me how much your work is out there, how much other people are talking about it, how much you're pushing it out there to other places. So if you're getting, you know, 30 hits and half of them are Facebook, you're doing nothing. You're doing nothing as far as I'm concerned. You might be talking to other people personally in your life, but you're not really doing the great work in any kind of a big way. And people will say, well, how could you compare that to, like, oh, typing in Michael Tessarion's name or Jordan Maxwell or David Icke or whoever, okay? You can absolutely compare it. My name may not bring up as many hits as them. More people may know about them. But you know what? My name's going to bring up a considerable number of hits. And if you go to those pages, it's going to be quality information about what's going on in the world. Okay, I challenge anybody to do that with their own name. And you know what most people who write in to complain? This is what they spend their time. Not educating people. No. They write to complain about what other people are doing wrong. I have never once written to another living soul online, ever, in a forum. Okay? I may comment on a Facebook post or something like that. You know, but I've never actively sought out someone's website to find their personal email address and write into their email what I think they're doing wrong. Never. I would rather spend my time putting the information that I know out there, and that's what I feel it would be doing it right. Yet, you constantly get these people that all they're spending their time doing is writing a nitpick about one thing that they don't agree with, and you know what I do with somebody like that? I never write back to them. Because that's called feeding the trolls. That's you know, encouraging them. Because that's what they really want. They want you to write back to them to somehow validate their bunk nonsense. And it's always bunk nonsense. It's always usually 100% pure garbage. And they'll say, you should cover this. You should talk about this. No, I shouldn't do anything other than what I'm doing right now. You know who should cover those things? You should. If that's what you want to talk about, get on the air and talk about it. If that's what you want to make aware to other people, get a webpage and make it aware to other people. That's what you should be doing with your time if you feel it's important. I should be doing exactly what I understand and putting my work out there for other people. What I've come to understand, putting that out there to other people. And I'm doing that as evidenced by searching for my name. When you search for any of these people's name, okay, and I've done it more than 100 times, I get an email. Okay, I say, well, let me see what this person is talking about, and let me look at their information online. Let me see how they're sharing what they say is important for other people to know. Instead of writing to me telling me you got this all wrong and you should be talking about this. Okay, I'll say, let me see where they're sharing this information, and I type their full name from their email. Okay, from their name on their reply to or whatever. The from field in the email into a search engine in double quotes. And you know what comes back, Tony? 100% absolute goose egg. Nada. A big zero. Cosmic egg comes back. That's what comes back. Invariably, every single time I do a search for what other people tell me is important and needs to be out there, when they write to me to tell me to cover it, because you know what they are? Cowards. Absolute cowards who don't want their name attached with anything that is questionable or is, might stir up controversy. They want to sit back as keyboard warriors, anonymously in many cases, telling people what they should be doing instead of actually doing that work themselves. Okay? And what that comes down to is cowardice. And it goes back to a dynamic I brought up before, which, again, you somewhat disagree, and that's fine. I call this self-loathing. This is the dynamic of truly hating yourself deep down inside, psychologically. And it does come from conditioning. You are absolutely correct. That's where that comes from. And that comes from the condition being this way for so long that what people have said to themselves is, I'm not worthy. I can't do this. Okay? I'm not good enough to do that. You know, when I looked at other people... doing things, I said, I could do that. As a matter of fact, I know I have the skills to do that even better than them. That's what I said to myself. I didn't sit back and say, you know, I need to write to David Icke and tell him I don't agree with him about how he views God as symbolism. I'm going to put out what I understand about God as symbolism myself and explain it in a way that I feel is better than his understanding of it. And I still think it's great what he puts forward because he's put out his level of understanding about it. That doesn't mean I have to negate all of his other work and say he's some kind of a shill or an agent because I don't agree with him about certain aspects of God as symbolism. Other aspects, I totally agree with him about it. Okay? That means he's seeing it from that perspective and putting out what he's come to understand, and I'm seeing it from my perspective and putting out what I've come to understand regarding it. And we can both be partially correct about that, and one of us might be more correct than the other. But we're both doing the work to put it out there for other people's consideration. The worst thing I could do is say, you know, I don't agree with that. Let me go on his webpage and try to find his email address, and I'm going to write to him and tell him how wrong he is about that. And I know the total truth about that, but yet I'm not sharing that with anybody. I'm just going to tell him that he's wrong, or I think he's wrong, and I'm not going to actually put that work out there. I'm not going to put my understanding of it out there. And this is what most people do, because you know what they are? They're cowards. They don't want their name attached to it. They don't want their name out in the public. They don't want their friends and family seeing, oh, yeah, I'm talking about this controversial topic or subject. Because deep down inside, they still want to be enslaved. They want other people to do the work that at the very bottom subconscious level, they know it's never going to get done until they start to do it. And more people start to do that work. It can't be, the dynamic is never going to change if it stays the way that it is. If you don't understand that, you understand nothing. Okay? The amount of people that are currently doing the great work and speaking the truth is not enough to free humanity. It's not enough to free humanity's mind. If it was enough to free humanity's mind, collective mindset, the collective mindset would already be freed and changed, and then the society would be free already. So clearly we have not reached the number that it's going to take to get this done. And until more people decide, instead of clicking on, seeking out an email address, clicking on an email and writing to somebody and saying, I have to tell you about what you got wrong and here's how it should be and why don't you talk about this, they need to start doing that themselves. Even if there's 7 billion different voices all talking about different things, that's what it's going to take to change the mindset. The problem is these people sit back and they do nothing. Emailing somebody about what you disagree with them about is doing nothing. You have not taken any actual real-world action. You want to take real-world action? Even go on a forum someplace, okay, and put out the information. Don't just say what you disagree. Put out the positive information that you want people to understand, even if you don't have your own website. I would say go get your own radio show, go get your own website, write a book, okay? Talk about this in as free a way as possible with the modern technology. Now, that's modern media. That is what modern media is. Modern media is books, videos, websites. Okay? If you're not doing one of those things and putting it out there for people to take in and consume and take it into themselves, you're doing nothing. You are not actually part of the transformation process known as the great work of changing human consciousness. You are somebody that wants that to happen magically without actually being part of the dynamic of force that it is going to take to get that done. And when I say force, I don't mean violence. I mean there is an amount of force to make anything happen in the world. Work gets done by force. The unit of work is force. That's how we measure how much work gets done, by how much force was put into a system of energy. And again, this is all energy. There is not enough there's not enough force in place to change this system of energy called human consciousness. We have not invested the amount of force through our own free will and through our willpower to educate other people. Until we do that, nothing will change. It has to be understood. People are still going to support slavery. They're still going to support keeping you enslaved. They're still going to believe that slavery is legitimate until enough people talk about that dynamic. That's the great work, is to convince people their religion of the belief in authority is an illusion, is wrong, is immoral, that they have been duped by buying into it, that they have been immoral for supporting it. Let me just repeat that. The great work that needs to be done by more people is people coming forward and speaking that the belief in authority is an immoral religion. Period. That's what the great work is. Until that work is done, okay, until more people start doing that actual work and effort, do not expect to be not enslaved. Slavery will continue until more people stop believing, condoning, and supporting that dynamic of violence and slavery, okay, of belief in authority, and start teaching other people who still are in that ignorant mindset that this is a false religion that needs to be abandoned, and by buying into it, they have been immoral beings. That they have been duped into condoning violence, even if they're not directly committing it. That the people who are committing that are immoral, meaning that all people in government are immoral. All people in the military are immoral. All police are immoral. Blanket statements, total statements, 100% total. There is no such thing as a truly moral being who can continue to be a cop. It is not a possibility. It cannot be possible. Cannot be done. Okay? There is no possibility of a truly moral being still existing in active duty military. Cannot be done. There is no possibility of any person still working in government in any capacity that is truly a woken moral being. Cannot be done. Those two things cannot exist simultaneously. You cannot be that moral being and still be a member of those institutions. It cannot be done. It is an impossibility. Because those institutions are based in violence. By condoning and being a part of the gear of that apparatus, you are condoning violence. Whether directly or indirectly. By saying willfully it should exist, or saying, well, I don't think it exists, but then your actions betray it because you're still doing that job. You're still actually lending your body to support that work. Therefore, when people say there's such a thing as a good cop, no, there is not. There is no such thing as a good cop. A cop is an order follower for man's written laws. Therefore, he is an order follower for coercion and the people who want to institute and continue to institute coercion, which is immoral activity, which is immoral behavior. Whether you understand that or not, and I'm not expecting everybody within the sound of my voice to understand that immediately. What I'm saying is it doesn't matter whether you understand it or not, it's still true that there's no such thing as a moral cop. That never has existed, doesn't exist now, never will exist, never can exist. It's impossible for that to exist. It's called cognitive dissonance. You believe that two contradictory ideas can exist simultaneously. A moral being is the opposite of a cop. They cannot be the same thing. That's like saying this tablet in front of me is black and yet it can be white at the same time. No, it cannot. It doesn't make a difference what your level of perception is. This tablet is black and it can never be changed into something that is white. That is the essence of the thing. The essence of moral behavior is that you are not an order follower. An order follower is always an immoral being. It doesn't make a difference whether they're being given moral orders to carry out. If you follow orders by definition, you are not understanding definitively the objective difference between right and wrong behavior and basing your action upon that understanding. That knowledge. What you're saying is, regardless of my understanding of right and the knowledge of right and wrong behavior, I will follow this order. And that's what a cop is, by definition. And don't tell me it is not. That is, by definition, what a cop is, because he is a law enforcer. Meaning, he is paid to do a job to enforce laws that are on the books, whether he morally agrees with them or not. That is what a cop does. That is the action that he takes, which is called following orders, which is always done in an immoral capacity. Whether the actual result ends up being moral or immoral depends on whether the law that is written was moral or immoral. But the capacity of the action, meaning was it based upon understanding or was it based upon just doing something that you were told? The capacity is always immoral because it is always based upon doing what you're told, which is what religion is. Religion is doing what you are told whether or not it is right. Whether or not it is right, period. That's religion. Religion is doing what you're told, whether or not the behavior is right. And what true morality is, what true conscience is doing what is right, regardless of what you are told. It's the exact opposite dynamic. For someone to be a truly moral being, they have to do what is right, because they know it is right, regardless of what anyone else is telling them. Because they definitively know the difference between right and wrong. So, anyone who supports the state is immoral. Because the state is based on some basic dynamics that are all based in theft and coercion. If we're being honest with ourselves, it is slavery. Think of some of the dynamics the state is based upon. Okay, taxation. Taxation makes the state run. It makes it run. If taxation all dried up, the state would probably try to think of some other schemes to continue their, you know, violence. But in general, the willing compliance of people to go along with the coercion called taxation, because they fear the repercussions if they do not, is what keeps the state's resources flowing. So, what is taxation? See, this is a euphemism. It's a euphemistic term. Okay, to call it taxation puts into people's minds, we're collecting money, we're collecting resources, and then we're using it for positive purposes, for things that must be in place and must be done. Otherwise, there would be chaos if these things were not done. Okay? But there's chaos by putting this system in place because we're instituting slavery. Well, as soon as you take away somebody's free will, boom, that's slavery. I don't care what you call it. I don't care what you want to euphemize it as. If there is no free will, you have to ask yourself the question, is there free will in this decision? If yes, there is freedom. If you say, do I have free will to choose in this dynamic? And the answer comes back, no, I do not have the free will to choose. That's called slavery. I don't care what it is, if we're being honest with ourselves. So you look at taxation, and the first question you have to ask is, is this something I have a choice, or is this somebody saying, you must do this? And the answer is, it's somebody saying, you must do this. They'll call it voluntary, okay? They want to have this little wordplay trick where they call it a system of voluntary compliance. I'm complying with what's been demanded voluntarily. That's not what
that is. Isn't that an oxymoron?
It's the exact opposite. Yeah. In compliance, you're complying to something that is someone's command, or it's a law, and you're either complying with it or you're not complying with it. Well, what taxation is a command. It's somebody saying, you must do this. And if you don't, there are repercussions. So let's break down what taxation is.
Mark, can we hold up here? Because we need to take another station break. Absolutely. I'm going to remind the listeners once again that we are listener supported, and you can donate on the front page. There's a donate button on the homepage of Wolf Spirit Radio. Your donation is a poke in the eye of the corporate domination and control pyramid. So please, please, please donate. And I personally take a great deal of glee in your donation, and that is the energy that helps support Dave Corso and Wolf Spirit Radio, so we can continue to provide this platform of being able to get out this very, very important information for the transformation of humanity on this planet. So Dale, can you take it away now?
This is Rebecca Jernigan. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
one.
Welcome back to Spirit Quest, creators. I have today my special guest, Mark Passio, and we've been really going down the trail here of natural law and the domination and hell on earth control of humanity. And Mark is going to continue with this whole another domination and control mechanism through taxation, licensing, and so forth. Mark, go ahead.
Sure. Well, we were talking about what taxation actually is if we stop euphemizing it and we try to understand what this dynamic is insofar as interaction between human beings. So what it is, it's a claim made by a group of people who call themselves government. And it's also backed by people who believe in this concept called government. And it's a claim that the people who call themselves government have been given by other people this thing that they call a right. And I put that in quotes, picture, you know, double quotes around the term right there, because it's not a right. It's actually a wrongdoing. But they claim that it is a right to confiscate an arbitrarily chosen percentage of the product of another individual's labor for use to do something that they have determined is required or necessary. Okay? So that's what it actually is. That's not what I believe it is. That's not my belief system about what taxation is. That is being honest and meticulously breaking down the dynamic of what the actual interactions between people when it comes to this concept called taxation are. And the interaction is one group of people is making a claim that they have a right to confiscate an arbitrarily chosen percentage of the product of other people's labor to do what they want to do with it. If we're being honest with ourselves, that's what it is. Okay?
Stealing.
Now, some people will insist that's not what taxation is. They'll have their own definition for it. And what they'll do is they'll euphemize and justify. Again, these are the two dynamics that keep cognitive dissonance going. Euphemization and justification. Trying to say, this is a right. This is a right. This is a right. Well, what I do is I ask people, if there were only two people in the world, would one of those people be able to make that claim? And would it be legitimate? So, Tony, if me and you were the only two people on the entire Earth and everybody else was gone from the planet, would I be able to say to you, Tony, anything that you produce, 50% of it belongs to me. I don't care whether you agree. You have no choice. 50% of it belongs to me because I think that I need to take that 50%, and it doesn't make a difference how altruistic I feel that I need to determine what we both do with that 50% of what you've made and created or done, you know, worked the land or whatever produced. The fruit of your production, I'm going to take half of it, whether you agree to give it to me or not. And if you do not, there will be repercussions. There's no free will. I've made a claim to something that isn't mine, namely your labor, which belongs to you. And the fruit of your labor, which belongs to you, okay, which you can freely choose to do what you want with. Now, maybe you want to share 100% of your labor with both of us, okay? But if I made the claim that I have a right to take whatever percentage I want, if it's 50 now, it could be 75 next week. It could be 100. And then I'm claiming you have to work for me. And everything that you produce is mine, and I'll decide what you get to keep. I'll decide what you get to eat. Okay? No one person would have the right morally to exercise that claim over another person and actually do that behavior. If they did, that would be an immoral behavior based in violence or at least duress, which is the threat of violence. I would either have to physically harm you to get you to continue to comply with that command, or I would have to threaten to harm you in some way to get you to comply with that command.
In the meantime, I've already perceived the threat, and I am armed.
If you really understood that that's what it is only a claim, an immoral claim at that. That right. would be the smart thing to do, and then right. take action, okay? But unfortunately, people's minds are so deadened that they insist this is somehow legitimate because we have so many people in the world. See, they think right and wrong change based on population. Well, one person, it would be wrong to do that to another, and they don't have that right. But since there's 7 billion people in the world, we need somebody doing this to allocate these resources and bring them to where they need to go. Well, if it's wrong for one person to do it, how can you take a wrongdoing and delegate the ability to enact a wrongdoing to any other living being or group of people? So in other words, the question I'm asking is, what individual has the right to forcibly confiscate the wealth of somebody else? Does any individual on the entire planet have that right? Do they inherently possess the right to take that kind of behavior? And the answer, if we're being honest with ourselves, is no human being has that right on this planet. There is no person in a position of kingship or authority that could say to one other living human being, I have the right to forcibly confiscate the product of your labor. Do you want to know why? When you make the claim that you are going to forcibly confiscate the product of another person's labor, you're making the claim that you are their owner. You own their body. If you own the product of somebody else's labor, the ability of them to produce that labor is done with the body. So if you're claiming the product of the labor, you're ultimately claiming the labor, and therefore you are ultimately claiming the body of that being. Therefore, what is the claim of the body of another person, of another being called? Slavery. That's what it's called. That is what slavery is. It's the claim that one person is making over another person's body or the ability of them, of the fruit of their labor. That's called slavery. So if I'm claiming the ownership of someone else's body or the ownership of the fruits of somebody else's labor, that's slavery, if we're being honest with ourselves. Now, if you say that claiming 100% ownership of that is slavery, I ask people to tell me the magic number that you could lower that claim to that would no longer make it slavery. Could I lower that magic number and say 50% confiscation is no longer of the product of somebody's labor is no longer slavery? No. 10%. If I said, well, I'm just going to confiscate 10% of the product of your labor, would that no longer make it a claim on you, on your body, on your rightful product of your labor? No, of course. It would still be slavery. The only number you could lower it to is zero, meaning that there's no more claim that you rightfully possess the product of another person's labor, whether they wish to voluntarily contribute it or not. So slavery is done through coercion. Therefore, it is violence and slavery. I'm sorry, taxation. Taxation is done through coercion, and therefore it is violence and slavery, by definition. Violence and slavery are always immoral, by definition. Therefore, taxation is always an immoral activity. It's always wrong. It's always a wrongdoing backed by violence. It is a form of slavery. Whether people see it as such or not doesn't make a difference. That's what it really is in point of fact, matter of fact reality. And there is no person, since no person owns that right, no individual owns that right, you can't come together and grant a non-existing right to someone else. See, human beings can't grant or take away any rights. Human beings all have the same rights under natural law. Everybody has the same ability to perform actions that are not causing harm to others. That's what rights are. Everybody's list of those rights is the same because the list of wrongdoings is the same. Therefore, all the actions human beings can do to cause harm to others are the same. So all wrongdoings for every individual is the same. Therefore, all rights for every individual are the same. So no one can come and claim the 10 of us are going to grant to this 100 people the right to forcibly confiscate the labor of others, the product of the labor of others. It can't be done because none of those 10 people have that right to delegate to someone else. You cannot give a non-existent right to someone else and then claim it becomes a right. In other words, you can't claim that a group of people now have the, quote, right to commit something, an act that is wrong. They always are performing a wrongdoing, and that can never be turned into a right. That's what's justification. Justification is trying to turn an action that is a wrongdoing into a right doing. It cannot be done. It always remains. Doesn't matter why you're doing it. That's why it's called justification. That means to create a right in Latin. From the Latin jus, meaning right, and faceo, facere, meaning to make or to create. That's where justification comes from. It means to make up a right, to invent a right that does not exist. That's what a justification is. When people say, well, it's going to pay for roads. It's going to pay for sanitation. It's going to pay for this or that. You know, it's going to pay for education. It's all justifications. You're claiming that what it's going to be used for can make the initial wrongdoing of violent confiscation into a right doing because of what you're claiming it's going to be used for. Well, it doesn't matter whether you're going to use it for something that's altruistic. That's not the point. That's secondary. That's ancillary to the primary condition that is the basis of the action, which is violence. The basis for the action is violent behavior. That's always wrong. The same could be said for other actions that the state claims is a right, like prohibition, to prohibit certain substances from being put into someone's body and saying, you don't have a free will choice whether to consume this or not. Prohibition is the claim that a group of people who call themselves government has been given a magical right to prevent others from putting any particular substance that they want to claim is off limits into the other people's bodies. And if they refuse to comply, then they can be fined or imprisoned or worse. Okay. If an individual's body is their own property, that individual must always maintain the natural right to decide what will or will not be put into their own property, their own body. That's why I could put what I want into my own car, into my own house, because they're my property. Well, my body is my property. I own my body while I'm inhabiting it, while my consciousness, my spirit inhabits it, while I'm using it. Okay? So nobody has a right to tell me what I may or not put into my own body. If they try to do that, that's coercion, and it's a claim of ownership over my body. Well, once again, what's the claim of ownership over a body called? Slavery. If we're being honest with ourselves. So all drug prohibition is immoral and backed by violence. Not some, not the most dangerous, hardest drugs. All of it. It doesn't matter what the substance is. If I want to bang heroin into my arm, that's my right. And people will say, well, you're harming yourself. But that's my right. I'm allowed to harm my own property. Okay? Now, if I had a child and I go become a heroin addict, I've given up my right to steward that child. That child can be taken from me as no longer being my ward because I've given up the personal responsibility to be responsible for the education and well-being of that child if I go and become an out-of-control drug addict, okay? If I can be functional in that respect, I would say somebody still has the right to put whatever they want in their own body as long as they can be functional and responsible. So you have to still be held responsible for what you do, for what you do. So in other words, if somebody can be a functional alcoholic and put into their own body amounts of alcohol that would be called alcoholism, and yet they can still properly raise a child, no one should attempt to take that child off of them and say, you're no longer fit to be the steward of this child. If they can do that. If there are functional heroin addicts, okay? But, people can drive a car with a certain level of alcohol in their body. I would make the claim, if you can pull it off, drink as much as you want and then go and drive. I think if you drink and then you lose control of your car, you have to be held responsible for that, for what you've done to somebody else. There are certain states you can still drink and drive in a car. You could actually have an open container of alcohol drinking it in a car while you're driving it, as long as you're still able to control your car. Certain states in the United States still allow that. Most don't, but there are a couple who do. Okay? So what I'm saying is responsibility plays into ownership. You have to be responsible for what you do at all times and places. That's what natural law is about. Okay? If I drink a beer and then get in a car and I can control the car, I was responsible. If I drink a beer, get in the car and can't control the car, I've lost responsibility. And if I harm others, I have to be held to account for doing that. But we have to separate the initial behavior of imbibing the substance from then the action that you're going to take while on the substance. So I'm not advocating anybody go get smashed and go try to drive a car. I'm saying you could try to do that and you might pull it off and then hurt nobody, okay, and you didn't actually cause harm. Okay, I wouldn't say you should then be thrown in a cage because you preemptively might have harmed somebody. I'm saying if you harm somebody, that person should have the right to take whatever repercussive action against you because you did something you had no right to do and you harmed somebody else by doing it. So if somebody pulls you out of your car and beats you to within an inch of your life after you just killed their child, am I going to say that they committed a wrongdoing? Not really. I'm not, you know. I would say you had no right to do that behavior, and then you damn well better be willing to take the consequences for taking a behavior right you had no right to take. Okay? You might get away with it, you might not. But we have to separate the behavior from the initial action, which is what prohibition is. It's prohibiting the initial action. It's saying this is off limits for consumption no matter what you're doing, no matter what you do after it. You can't inject heroin regardless of what you're going to do after you do that. Okay, that's the claim of ownership on a body. That's the claim that you own somebody else and you own their decision-making process of what they will or will not put into your body. And again, it's justified because you say, well, they might go and do this. Well, I might take a whole bunch of sugar into my body, not think straight, and then go do some crazy stuff too. Well, sugar's legal. Anybody, alcohol's legal. I can go buy 10 six-packs tonight and go hammer down three of them and be within, you know, an inch of being able to even walk, you know, and get up and go do some crazy stuff to somebody else that I might not even remember the next day. But that's substance legal. So we have to separate legality and morality, and we have to separate prohibition from the action that can be done as a result of imbibing the substance. The action of prohibition is making a claim that a substance is off limits for consumption, regardless of what follows that. The action of the imbibing or taking into the body of that substance in whatever form or media you're going to do that is off limits. That's coercion. That's a claim of ownership of body. That's slavery. I don't care. And again, I'm not telling you this is my opinion. There is no opinion when it comes to this. This is the fact of the matter. This is what it actually is. If you think it's something other than what I've just described, you're wrong. You're incorrect. There is a correct thing that prohibition is, and there's incorrect opinions or perceptions of what it is. I'm not giving you a perception of what it is. I'm telling you the definition of what it actually is in nature. That's what the behavior actually is. This is what people have to understand, that there is a truth about what things are. I'm not saying this is what I think prohibition is, what I believe it to be. It's either is this thing or it is not this thing. This is what prohibition actually is. Again, with the caveat, if you're being honest with yourself. And again, most people are not honest with themselves. They lie to themselves continually. Okay? Now, the same with licensing and permits. Here's another thing that underlies all statism. Okay? A group of people calling themselves government have been magically gifted with this thing that they call a right to prevent others from exercising specific behaviors, even if those behaviors cause no harm to others or cause no harm to other people's property. Okay? Now, they'll grant them permission if they beg the government or pay them for this special permission to be allowed to exercise these rightful behaviors. So, let's talk about handguns. In the state of Pennsylvania, I need a permit to carry a handgun. Okay? Or allegedly I do. They would say that's a privilege granted to you by the state. Well, who have I harmed by carrying a handgun? I've harmed no one. If you take a handgun and you put it on in your belt or you put it in a holster and put your shirt down over top of it and you walk outside in that condition, who has been harmed? No other living being has been harmed or defrauded by you doing that. You have not taken anything that does not belong to you. You have not damaged anybody else's property or their well-being in their physical body. Therefore, no harmful action has been done. Therefore, that's a right. Yet the state would claim it controls that you are allowed to do that or not. And if you do that without their permission, you could be punished. And if you have their permission, then you have a magical right that other people don't have. If I have this card that I begged the state for and paid them for, then I can do an action that other people don't have the right to do. I have rights other people don't, Tony. Don't you know? I can get rights with paying people some imaginary pieces of promissory notes. You know, I can gain a right that other humans don't possess. That's possible. Yeah. That's possible to do. Yeah. And then I would have a right that this person who didn't go through that procedure of begging and paying doesn't have. Yes, my rights would be different from their rights, don't you know? Do you see how ridiculous this sounds when you really get down to what it really is, to what it actually is? Either that action is a moral behavior or it's not a moral behavior, and there is no in between. Either it's a right or it's a wrongdoing. So how could the state make the claim it's going to control who is allowed to do that behavior and who is not? You know, either speaking out against something that you feel is wrong is a right that you have naturally, or it's not. So how could the state claim that if you want to gather a bunch of people, you need a permit to do that, to gather and protest? They'll say it's for blocking the street. Okay? Well, you know what? The right of grievance comes before the right of way. There are also, there can be orders of rights, of what rights are more important. The right to speak one's mind, especially if so many people think something that is happening is wrong and want to try to stop it. That right of grievance trumps the right of travel. Okay? Or it trumps the inconveniencing of travel. That person would still be free to travel. They might have to go around the protest. Okay? The right to protest and the right to exercise air grievance would absolutely trump the right of convenience of travel through certain thoroughfares or roadways. So nobody can make the claim if a million people wanted to come together and protest GMOs and food, okay? I say they could do that and block whatever roads are taken up by that protest. And it's just too damn bad that people can't pass those roads. Because that's more important than being able to travel through certain thoroughfares. You might have to go around and get there some other way, or God forbid you might need to walk. God forbid you might need to you get some exercise, park your car outside of that area and go walk somewhere. No, because the right to keep the roads clear would trump the right of people to air their grievance against something they feel is morally unjust. Okay, so I don't buy that excuse for a protest whatsoever. I don't buy it. I don't buy into that. That's nonsense on its face. On its face, that's nonsense.
Right. Okay? God forbid anybody interrupt the flow of hell on earth.
Yeah. So I'll end that there. I think that's given people enough understanding of simple things that you just need to break down into what they really are. Not being honest with yourself at all times, at all places, and just getting down to the basic dynamics. Forget all the justifications. Well, this has to be in place because. See, that's where people go wrong with this. They constantly trying to think of, oh my God, if this wasn't this way, what would happen? You know what might happen, folks? Chaos might happen. Inconvenience might happen. People indiscriminately exercising human rights might happen. I fully admit that. It might be uncomfortable. There might be a transitional period of even chaotic interaction between people until they figured out how to do this peacefully. You know what we have to do? We have to allow for that. If you're afraid of chaotic interaction between human beings and you justify slavery, you are a willful slave. I tell people I'll take my dangerous freedom over perfectly safe slavery any day of the week, any hour of the day. Give me my dangerous freedom that includes 100% possibility of chaos at all times and places. I'll take my freedom, and I'll take my chances. Okay?
You actually brought up something very good as far as a point that, and it was more of a spiritual golden nugget that took me a while to learn, and I found it very interesting, but quite true, is that anytime I'm trying to justify an action I'm going to take, I'm already in a dark alley because right action does not require justification.
That's exactly correct. And there's so many things people still justify that are immoral actions. They're based on violence to other beings, and they still justify them as legitimate. There's the main problem with the world: cognitive dissonance through euphemization and justification. If you understand how that dynamic works, you're well on your way to waking up. So the last thing I think we wanted to get into a little bit, you had asked me to talk about human origins. Yes.
Right, and how this whole authoritarian and hierarchy network began and how it's manifested through the ages and how we just continually accept it without ever questioning it.
Okay, so we don't have a lot of time for this.
No,
so
we just only got about 14 minutes left. Okay, so
I'll just paint a brief outline for people, and they can look further into this on their own. The first thing I will fully recognize and even beginning to explain this is, one, I have not talked about this very much in my own work. This is something I'm slowly beginning to transition to talking about for the reason that until you understand the slavery system and how it operates, it is going to be very painful and difficult to accept what put the slavery condition into place, the conditions of slavery into place in humanity. They did not just over time develop organically. This is a mistake that a lot of people believe, this is a mistake a lot of people fall into, believing that this just happened over long periods of time and we fell from our understanding. These systems were put in place all at once. They were given to us. We were coerced and forced into compliance with these systems all in one time, all at once. And it has been this way since human beings have existed. We have never been free. Humanity has always been a slave species. This is a very difficult, very painful thing for human beings to understand and accept, because ultimately what you are accepting is that the entire nature of spiritual life on earth is that we are livestock living on a farm. That is our condition. I shouldn't say that is our nature. Let me take that back and say that's not the nature of life on earth. That's the entire condition of life on earth. And the reason people are going to be very loath to accept this is because I'm making the claim that non-human entities put us into this condition. We were put into this condition by beings that are not from this planet, that are extraterrestrial in nature, or possibly extra-dimensional in nature. Ancient occultic belief systems and schools of thought called these the Archons. A-R-C-H-O-N-S, the Archons, which means the rulers or the masters, or what I would simply call the farmers, okay? What you're living on, you're not living on a free planet. You're living on a place that acts as a farm for other beings, okay? Now, some people will hear that and be horrified, and then others will hear that and say, what's wrong with that? I've gotten this response from people. They'll say, well, we farm other creatures, we farm other animals. And I will respond with, exactly. This is what's wrong with it. When you're farming, you're taking the life energy of beings who you don't own. They own themselves. Okay? The dog that I steward, the dogs that I steward, they are my wards. I care for them because they can't care for themselves on their own out in nature. I'm their steward. Okay? I've taken on the role of being their steward. So I provide for them. All right? These beings aren't our stewards. They're farming us. They feed off of our energy. And ultimately, they eat us. We are their food. Okay? It's just as morally wrong for us to farm other animals in that capacity. Not to act as their stewards and caretakers, but to farm them and use them as our source of energy and food. I feel that's just as immoral as what's being done to us. And there you have, in a nutshell, the principle of correspondence as it is taught in all the ancient mystery tradition schools. As above, so below. As we continue to farm, we will continue to be farmed. If we want to stop being farmed, we have to stop farming. We think we own the life of other beings, so other beings will continue to believe that they own our lives. It's the most difficult thing for people to accept because of how conditioned we are. Most people are going to continue to agree and justify these behaviors forever, till the day they die. I'm not in delusion about this. See, I am not in the belief that other people are going to come around and understand this dynamic. They're going to call this New Age. They're going to call this, you know, mumbo jumbo. They're going to, you know, say that this is part of a New Age deception. Okay? The truth is so horrific. I'm not telling people this to try to get them to shut down and be fearful and think that there's no possibility of ever escaping this condition. Okay? I ask people this. Would a cow have the right to kill the farmers that were trying to farm it? If a cow could do so, if it could break out of its condition, would it have every right, if a farmer wouldn't stop coming at it to try to kill it, would that cow have every right to defend its own life? And the answer, if we are being honest with ourselves, is yes, it does. Yes, it would. It would have the right to do whatever it could at its disposal, to use whatever amount of force to defend its life, and if necessary, put the life of that person who was coming at it with a blade to kill it, or a bolt to kill it, as it could. And that's the same thing for a human being. Farmers are farming us that are non-human. The control system believes that they are farmers with the right to do this to us on this farm called Earth. And the livestock has every right to defend itself with the use of lethal force. The lethal usage of force as necessary to stop that practice. And until humanity understands that, it understands nothing. It understands zero about what real spirituality is. It understands zero about the law of correspondence. It understands zero about what's really taking place on Earth. Now, those beings have been called the Archons. They've also been called many other names. They've been called the Watchers. They've been called extraterrestrial entities. They've been called supernatural beings or gods. People have referred to them as they're nothing of the kind. They're not real gods. They call themselves gods and try to play themselves off as our gods, you know, but they're nothing of the kind. The ancient Sumerians called them those who came to the earth from the sky or from the heavens. In their language, that word was Anunnaki. Okay. But it doesn't make a difference what you call them. They could have come from the sky, from other planets, from the sea, from other dimensions. It doesn't matter where they came from. They're not from the land where we're from, period. They're not from Earth. They're not from terra firma, okay? They came here, and they use us as livestock to provide energy for them. That's the basis of this understanding. Most people will never accept it. They're in cognitive dissonance about it. No matter how many ancient accounts that our ancestors meticulously tried to preserve about the stories of what happened here in the ancient past, how non-human beings were interacting with humanity and farming us, okay, claiming to be our owners, giving us our systems of religion, giving us our systems of government. They put these systems in place to control the population so they didn't have to control it forcefully with physical action.
You know, Mark, this is where this gets very galactic, and stepping back and looking at the big picture, and I find this so disturbing yet fascinating in a very troubling way, is right. That there seems to be this hierarchy and authority of being able to prey on lower consciousness.
There it is.
Constantly. And this is where I get very challenged, is that we're looking at the planet to try and correct what is going on with just the human beings on the planet. And yet we're doing the same things that these other beings of supposedly, and this is where I get to really start questioning this, of supposedly higher consciousness that set this entire energetic hell in motion. And it really begs a question, you know, how do we break out of this on a lower consciousness level when it's being inflicted on us And we are the prey of this higher, again, in quotation marks, consciousness.
There is an answer to that question. And
God,
most
I hope
people
so.
Will not like the answer. The answer is the deepest possible understanding of sovereignty that one can come to. And most people are not there. They'll claim their own sovereignty in many cases and still claim that lower species or supposedly lower species do not have sovereignty. So how can someone claim their own sovereignty and then say a cow isn't a sovereign being or a dog isn't a sovereign being or a fish isn't a sovereign being? See, there's only one level of sovereignty. Sovereignty means everything in the creation is at the same level under the creator. Okay? Now, somebody would say, well, why could we eat plants but not eat animals? Okay? Plants are not sovereign beings. They're part of the system of the earth. They grow, they're symbiotic in conjunction with the earth. They are beings though. Okay? Now, at some level of consciousness, if we were able to not take sustenance from plants, should we make the moral decision to do it? Yes. The answer would be yes. If you can come to a level of consciousness where you could just live on light energy, or prana, as it is called in the Eastern traditions, and you would not have to take in plants into your physiology, should you then abandon even vegetarianism? And the answer is yes. Okay? But that's not where our consciousness is right now. Are we at the level that we could abandon the farming of what we would call lower consciousness forms of animals and subsist and survive and even thrive on simply a plant-based food diet? And the answer is yes. We could do that. So then would it be moral? Would it be a moral decision to do that and an immoral decision to continue our practice of farming? And the answer is yes, it would be. Okay? Most people don't want to hear that because they want to justify continuing to do with the lower species what we are doing, what is being done to us by species that consider us their food source. They don't have to continue to do this, but they immorally continue to do this because it's easier for them to do that, to survive on us as a form of food. And when I say survive on us as a form of food, I don't even just mean energetically, folks. I mean physically. I mean, where do you think all the disappeared children go every year?
Eight million
children worldwide, yeah, or more, yes, disappearing. Yep. You think they're just being used for slave trade? You think they're just being used for satanic ritual abuse? You have another thought coming to you if you think that's all it's about. It's a food source. It's a food source.
The numbers are absolutely stunning. I was just listening to a video, and I forget the guy who actually did the video. I was listening to this 3 days ago, and the numbers are staggering.
Yep. So these beings live on us. They live off of us. They're parasites. The Archons are parasites. They don't respect sovereignty. They have an animal mind, and they've given us their animal mind. See, the way to propagate the system is to keep propagating the mindset. So they support a system of slavery, okay? They're probably eaten by even larger beings than them, more macrobiotic beings than them. And this isn't the natural order, folks. People want to think of this because they're brainwashed by Darwinism. You know, this is natural. It's just the way things are. No, it isn't. It's a consciousness, free will decision to propagate immorality. Human beings could stop this if they wanted to. But we don't want to. Because we don't have enough self-respect for ourselves to fully claim our own sovereignty. And then enough respect for other beings to say they're also sovereign. And we should not treat them as non-sovereign. We don't have that respect for ourselves as a species. We just don't have it. We're still in a state of self-loathing because we've been taught this is how it should be. This is natural. This is right. There's nothing right or natural about it. It's not the natural order. It's the artificially imposed chaos that we are trapped in because we won't make a willful, conscious decision to change it en masse. And until we do, enjoy your so-called natural order. That there's nothing natural and nothing orderly about. Enjoy your chaos and most of all enjoy your slavery. Because until we decide that we don't want to continue to farm, we'll continue to be farmed. We will continue to be formed according to the law of correspondence, the law of correspondence of consciousness and energy. If you farm, you will be farmed. If you kill, you will be killed. If you eat other sentient beings, you will be eaten by other sentient beings. The end. The end. And think that's New Age all you want, all day long. Call me out as New Age. That's no skin off my... I know the truth. I know the truth. I know how morality works in the universe. I know how natural law works in the universe. As long as we make those immoral decisions, immoral things will be done to us. The end. That's how it will work, invariably like a computer. Natural law works like a computer dynamic. As we make immoral decisions, immoral things get done to us. And therefore we are enslaved. The end. Accept it, understand it. If you want to change it, you have to stop doing the immoral activities and stop justifying them. The end. It's painful. It's harsh. No one wants to hear it, but it's exactly the way it is. Not because I say so, because those are the laws that govern the universe. And people can come to an accurate understanding of those moral dynamics. They are not irrevocably hidden from us, separated from us. We are not cut off from them. We can understand them if we make a conscious free will decision to stop euphemizing and justifying immoral activity. That's all I have to say.
So this gets into something that I have brought up actually previously, and it describes exactly what you're talking about. And this is from Carlos Castaneda's book, The Other Side of the Active Side of Infinity, where Don Juan is being told what is going on with this Archon energy. And I'll just read this short quote here. We have a predator energy blockage that came from the depths of the cosmos. It took over the rule of our lives. Human beings are its prisoners, and the predator energy blockage is our lord and master. It has rendered us docile, helpless. If we want to protest, it suppresses our protest. If we want to act independently, it demands that we don't do so. Sorcerers believe that the predator energy blockages have given us our systems of beliefs, our ideas of good and evil, our social mores. They are the ones who set up our hopes and expectations and dreams of success or failure. They have given us covetousness, greed, and cowardice. It is the predatory energy blockages who make us complacent, routine, and egomaniacal. And then he goes on to say, for some reason this is truncated, how what these predatory energies, these archons did, is they gave us their mind.
That's right. They gave us our way of thinking about the quote-unquote natural order. Okay? They didn't teach us natural law because they're not living it. So they gave us their idea of what is acceptable and right, which is higher forms of life must always feed off of lower forms of life. And this system has to be propagated and go on and on and on in an endless chain of slavery forever in both directions. And what I'm explaining is until our mindset breaks free from the belief that these things are necessary, that slavery is necessary, both of humanity and of other beings, of other animals, until we understand that slavery is not only necessary, that it's always immoral, we are going to continue to be enslaved. That is exactly what these archons have done. They've given us their perspective or their worldview. And the only way of stopping this system is to break out of that worldview and understand none are legitimately enslaved. Slavery is always immoral at all times and at all places. And until we understand that and stop condoning it and justifying it, will we be free? That's when we'll be free, and not a millisecond until we come to that level of consciousness. Now, does that sound like we're going to be enslaved for a long time to you, Tony? Because I think it's going to be, based on where we are now, without some kind of divine intervention, it's going to be billions of years. Not hundreds of thousands, not millions, billions of years. I would say that the condition may be so permanent here on Earth that we may be free when finally the Earth spirals into the sun. We may not be in free until that happens, when the Earth finally dies. Until we can summon the will to change this consciousness. If we don't summon that will, that's how long we're looking at slavery. If we can summon the willpower to change human consciousness, maybe we'll free ourselves from this. It might. We might have a chance to do it. So I'm no wild-eyed optimist about what's really going on here on Earth. What I'm doing is I'm putting forward the truth regardless of the condition. That's willpower. That's service to truth. That's doing the will of creation regardless of what's happening in the 3D world. And that's what I will continue to do.
Yes, there is absolutely no doubt, and this is just my sense and my understanding, that we are supremely challenged at this point, because what I see happening on the face of this planet right now, and it isn't just affecting humanity. We are literally, through our acquiescence, our acceptance, and our in unwillingness to really stand up and change things, take the action to change things, where this includes we are killing our planet.
That's right. That's right. We're killing a macrobial being, you know, being the living system that sustains and supports our form of life. And in doing that, you know, we would create a cataclysmic reaction in this solar system, and that could possibly have ripple effects throughout the galaxy. You know, I think of the planet that was destroyed that became our asteroid belt. Who knows what kind of repercussions that had on consciousness here? That could have been part of what led to the degradation in consciousness here on Earth, in addition to the slavery system put into place by the Archons, if you will. You know, that could have had a combined effect. So, you know, until we decide to have respect for all living systems, we're not going to make any headway. And most people still think about it like this is perfectly natural, normal, necessary, and orderly of us doing farming. We're going to continue to be farmed. That's all it really comes down to. And we have to understand, if we were that animal, we wouldn't want that done to us, so we shouldn't do it to that animal. We don't want these beings who consider themselves our masters to do that to us. So would we have a right to rebel against them? Yes, you're damn right we do. We have that right now, just most people don't recognize it and understand that we have that right now. Animals would have the same right to do that to us. I would say any animal stampede that would happen on a farm, if they didn't want to be held there against their will, they'd have every right to put down those farmers. And I'd tell that right to a farmer's face. Your cows would have a right to stampede and kill you. In a moment, in an instant, in a heartbeat. Every single right, because you're holding them against their will, and you don't have a right to go just put them into a slaughter factory. You think you do, as a higher form of being that has that right to do that to them. You don't, in point of fact, reality and truth and nature, you don't really have that right. You justify it and believe you have that right. Would they have the right to stomp your ass into a mud hole in the ground? Absolutely. Right now, they would. You know? So the same question would be asked of us. We're enslaved right now. Would we have every right to rise up and kill our farmers? In a heartbeat. Every right. The problem is most people don't understand that that right exists. And that would be murdering nobody. That would be coming up, rising up, and saying, we're giving you a chance to stop doing this. If you don't stop doing this, we're going to exercise our right to physically use our defensive force to take ourselves out of this self-imposed slavery. I just ask somebody, just look at one-on-one slavery. If a girl, let's say an 18-year-old girl, was kidnapped off the streets of Los Angeles and taken into a slave ring for some high-level Saudi Islamic, twisted Islamic drug, oil, and slavery cartel ring. Just let's say that was happening. This girl gets taken. She gets thrown on a boat, you know, beaten within an inch of her life, muzzled and handcuffed, thrown on a boat, taken over to Saudi Arabia, and now she's in a slave trade for some, you know, psychopathic so-called Saudi princes, okay? And this is happening every day, anyway, for real, in reality. Just let's say this happens to an 18-year-old girl out of Los Angeles. Would she have every right to rebel against that system of captivity and that state of captivity, even unto physically killing anybody that was doing that slavery and supporting it, condoning it? And your answer, if you don't understand that that person would have the right to use physical force to kill anybody involved in perpetuating her slavery, then you understand zero about what it is to be free. Okay? What I'm explaining is every animal who's enslaved would have a right to kill their enslavers. And that wouldn't be murder. That would be using defensive use of physical force to free yourself and claim your right as a sovereign being. And until we understand that, we know nothing about real spirituality. And we're buying into utter bull crap about what spirituality is. Utter crap that is sold to us by right brain imbalanced religion. Right brain imbalanced religion. I'm trying to explain to people no one has a right to exercise control over others and put them into a system of slavery. Yet, people should be rebelling against that system of slavery. You shouldn't just lay down to it and say, oh, I somehow understand and justify what they're doing. They want us to justify and claim that their slavery system is legitimate. Well, it should never be justified as legitimate. And every being that's part of that slavery system that is held under duress by that slavery system does possess inherently the right to rebel against it physically. Physically, if they will not back down. And I'm telling you, it's coming to that. It's gonna come to that. It's going to come to that if we don't do the great work of educating people about the immoral wrongness of this system and give them the opportunity to back down from it and say, okay, I will not continue to do this, support it, or condone it in any way. If they back down from that, then we can do it in consciousness. And not one drop of blood will need to be spilled. Not one bullet will need to be fired. But if enough people do not do that work of helping people to understand what's really taking place here is slavery, you can guarantee there's going to be a bloody human future. You can guarantee it as sure as you can guarantee the sun's coming up in the east tomorrow. Bet on it. Bet on it like you know your own name. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I have to unfortunately agree is that we have not seen the trajectory of the fascist police state change whatsoever. More domination, more control. And my feeling about that is, and that's actually why I'm here, and this is why I brought you on this show, and I so appreciate your passion, is that we need to shift our consciousness and the action that we take, because if we don't, it ain't pretty what's coming.
Suffering can result if we do not make that change in consciousness. So that's why I do what I do. I do it because I want to see it done in consciousness, not have to be done through some sort of physical force. Because ultimately, if it has to be done that way, the lesson wasn't really learned. It was only learned by a small group of people, and most people tried to hold the immoral system in place. That's why I say all of my work is for trying to getting this done in consciousness, not physically. But will I support it if it has to be done physically? Yes, I will. I will, because I recognize that is a right of a free people to physically take themselves out of bondage. That is a right. Do I want to see it have to be done that way? No. I want to see it done in consciousness. Okay? But we need more numbers. We need more people explaining this dynamic and getting more people to help us accomplish it in consciousness. So I'll wrap it up there and just tell people, if you want to hear more information, please go to my website, whatonearthishappening.com. I recommend going to the podcast section and going forward in order from podcast number one through to the modern podcasts in order at your own pace. That is how you will get the most value out of these podcasts, and it is how your worldview will change if you take all that information and all the ancillary information that I've posted with the podcast into yourself over time. That's my recommendation for my website. There are also tons of videos up there, tons of resources. It's a lifetime of research up there. Start the journey today, whatonearthishappening.com. That's my site, whatonearthishappening.com. I also just briefly want to mention I'm going to be speaking live in Asheville, North Carolina March 22nd. That's March 22nd. That's coming up in 22 days from now. I'm going to be speaking in Asheville, North Carolina on the deceptions of the New Age religion. So you can come and hear that if you're in the Asheville area. More information on that on my website at whatonearthishappening.com at the top of the news section. So, Tony, I want to thank you once again for bringing me on to your great show, and we could pick this up at some future point and do a part three and break this down even further.
Yeah, that would be absolutely awesome, and you know you're always welcome back to Spirit Quest. Thank you so much, listeners, for joining me today on Spirit Quest on this extended broadcast. We did 3 hours and 15 minutes. Thank you so much, and bless you, and I love you all.
Take care.
Have a good day. All right.